using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 9th of November, year of our Lord 2021, day 603 of America held hostage by an emergency. Well, today we're going to talk about the vaccine mandates and the pushbacks against it. And we're starting to get some opposition in some very unexpected places. And, of course, all of this predicated on an emergency that isn't an emergency. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And in the third hour, we're going to be joined today by GoTree, and he's going to talk about cryptocurrency. We've got a lot of interesting things to tell you about it, I think, things that will help you to navigate this and to not become part of the madness of crowds, but to perhaps, use it a little bit. Don't go crazy about it. I mean, as I see Joe Rogan and Alex Jones jumping into this with both feet, that may signal a top to the market. I don't know if I get in on it. You'll definitely know that it's a top to the market. But there is benefit to be had by it. And a diversified portfolio is something everybody should pay attention to. And I want to get GoTree on because he knows the pitfalls of being experienced in cybersecurity and other things. And he doesn't have an axe to grind. He's not selling it. He's not taking it. So I wanted to get him on for an honest assessment of how people could navigate this and how they are, of course, it's worlds apart from the central bank digital cash. That is pure evil. As I pointed out yesterday, that is nothing other than a surveillance version of their fiat currency. It has all of the evils of the Federal Reserve's fiat currency, plus surveillance and control, being able to turn it off if you've spent more than you're allowed to spend, because your carbon footprint. Or if you are somebody that they don't like, they can immediately turn it off for anything at all. So we do not want to have a central bank digital currency. And so as we see all these different things in different markets, and of course every market is rigged to one degree or the other, as Peter Thiel and others have said, is it rigged? Yeah, but to a lesser degree, perhaps, in some of these other markets, just simply because it's newer, but everything is changing constantly. So how do you keep your ear to the ground? We'll be talking to GoTree in the third hour about that. I want to begin, though, with the toxic medication that is put out there, this Kool-Aid that people are injecting into their veins, as well as what it has done in terms of corrupting our medical care in so many different ways, as well as science. We haven't just lost our rule of law and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and individual liberty and personal dignity. We haven't just lost those things. We've also lost science, and we've also lost legitimate health care. Doctors who have integrity are being driven out by this lying regime, by this corrupt criminal cabal that we call big pharmaceutical companies, that both Democrats and Republicans, left and right, cannot stop cheering and subsidizing and protecting. So let's take a look at, again, I want to go back after I talked yesterday briefly about Gavin Newsom and the fact that he has strangely been missing for 11 days after he got the jab. His last public event was to show people that he's going to get his booster shot. So I tweeted out, I said, oops, maybe he didn't get the placebo. His family, his wife, tweeted out and then quickly deleted it, but not before a Sacramento Bee reporter took a snapshot of what she had tweeted out. She said this: when someone cancels something, maybe they're just in the office working, or maybe in their free time they're at home with their family, at their kids' sporting matches, or dining out with their wife. Please stop hating and get a life. And she pulled that off. Well, there's a problem with all this. There's been no reports from anybody else saying, yeah, he's in the office. He's not doing public events, but he's in the office. When he dines out with people, that typically is an event, especially because in California, because of him and people like him, they've made it very difficult to dine out. And so you have to show passports. That's a new thing in Los Angeles. Began yesterday. Massive protests. We're going to see some of those. It becomes a big issue. It was a big issue to help him get into a recall election because he did dine out without a mask as he was telling everybody else they had to wear a mask. But I think the key thing about all of this, besides rumors, and there have been rumors, you have RFK Jr. saying that he's had people who know Gavin Newsom say that he has had a reaction, Guillain-Barré. That can be temporary. It can be permanent. It can be very damaging. The first time I ever saw that was in the reports by Mike Wallace about what happened with the first swine flu back in the 1970s. The whole thing was based on a lie. And Mike Wallace deconstructed that 60 Minutes. The fact that they had one soldier who died on base, and they said, this is a new strain of flu, and it's very deadly. The reality is that he was one of three soldiers who were laid up that particular day, very sick. But drill sergeant, or whoever it was responsible for, decided that he was going to have him come out and do the drill anyway. He collapsed, and the guy who was the commanding officer on the scene gave him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. None of the other people, the other two that were sick and stayed in the hospital, they got better. They did not claim that they had this new novel strain of flu. And it was so scary that everybody had to get it. And yet the person who gave him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation didn't even get sick. But they used it in the news media to hype a rushed vaccine. And Mike Wallace, when he interviewed somebody who was severely injured with Guillain-Barré, and she had been unable to walk for a couple of years, and she was now shakily walking with braces on her legs, and they were telling her, you're never going to get back full use of your legs. She said, I had some health issues prior to this, nothing like this, nothing like Guillain-Barré syndrome. And she said, I thought, well, if a healthy young soldier doing basic training died from this, I better get the vaccine. And so that was the first time we saw it. It's something that's been highly associated with vaccines in the past. And, of course, it's been associated with these particular vaccines. I don't know if that's what he has, but this is why I believe that there is something to this. I believe that he has had some kind of a reaction. Because, as reported by the Associated Press, Associated Propaganda, propaganda associated with the government, they said when the initial announcement was made October the 29th, his office said that Newsom planned to participate virtually in the United Nations Climate Summit, but he did not. His last public appearance was October the 27th when he received a coronavirus booster shot. Now understand, if you were somebody like Gavin Newsom, the place for you to, the event of the year is the UN Climate Summit, COP26. He would have been there. He was planning on being there. 2 days after he gets the shot, they said, well, he's going to do it in a virtual participation. He's going to zoom in, not with a private jet like these other guys, but he will zoom in virtually. He never even did that. Now, why would he not even do that? So one Republican assemblyman said, tweeted out, I don't know where he is, and I won't speculate, but it's pretty strange for a governor to disappear for 11 days without explanation. So it's not just him. We have some other celebrity creatures that are getting vaccinated. This was sent to me by a listener who is in California, San Francisco, as a matter of fact, at the Monterey Museum. And this is a local paper, the Monterey Herald, talking about how they are vaccinating sea otters at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. I've been there. That's a really nice aquarium. As a matter of fact, the listener says that story that I had about the autonomous cars that were getting confused and going down to a dead-end street into a cul-de-sac and piling up and creating all kinds of problems. He said, I live on that cul-de-sac. He said, they're all over the place. This is about the sea otters. And what they did was they rounded them up, and they got a picture of the sea otter and a net that they have grabbed. And the way they describe it in the local paper, they said when Dr. Mike Murray's needle was ready, the scene gave a new definition to vaccine hesitant. There was wriggling and squirming. Even with four assistants wearing thick, bite-proof gloves, holding the patient on a mat with a duffel bag filled with foam. And the doctor joked after he got the shot into him. He says, what we have here is a buzzsaw in a fur coat. A little bit less compliant than the Sesame Street furry creatures that have become salesmen for big pharmaceutical companies. But this isn't the first time that you've seen all of these stories about COVID, about vaccines, and about zoo animals. Back in September, middle of September, we had gorillas in the Atlantic Zoo began coughing. They tested positive for COVID after they came in contact with a fully vaccinated keeper. And so they 13 Western lowland gorillas at the Atlanta Zoo have tested positive. And they said that they were very careful to keep them isolated and that they never came in contact with a team member that wasn't fully vaccinated and wearing all the personal protective equipment, and yet somehow they still came down with it. Perhaps they got the spike protein, which is much worse than the virus. Who knows? And so this story yesterday was on the Drudge Report. Anti-vax movement rallies around giraffe deaths. And what they're saying is they've had three giraffes that have died. QAnon has jumped into this. So this is why you don't want to jump the shark or the giraffe. You don't want to add false details to stuff because it comes back and it bites you. We don't need to go above and beyond. And maybe, you know, they didn't die from the vaccine. Maybe it was just a sore throat, because that can be pretty dangerous in a giraffe, right? It's a big problem. They were forced, looking into this, Mikhail Valen, who I used to work with at InfoWars, now is at the Daily Dot. So he looked into it. All right, what is going on with this? So you had one three-month-old giraffe had to be euthanized because it was injured. Then you had had a catastrophic injury to one of its legs, so they put it down. They don't just shoot horses, I guess they shoot giraffes as well. The second death involved a 19-year-old giraffe. It suffered age-related health issues that led to liver failure. Were they giving him remdesivir? We will not speculate on that. Just joking, quite fair. And then a 14-year-old giraffe named Jesse the giraffe, after blood tests showed abnormal liver enzymes. So in this particular case, it looks like they did not die from the vaccine. But there are a lot of people who are. You have a story from Vaccine Impact One, brave ICU physician reporting COVID-19 vaccine injuries leads to a dozen more. We have to be careful what we report. And this is a good source in this Vaccine Impact article. This is a good source. They talked to a guy who has incredible credentials. And he's talking about the censorship that he has faced. As a matter of fact, his credentials go on for nearly an entire page. He's got a long list of degrees, a long list of places that he has worked at, things that he has headed. He's been at Massachusetts General Hospital, at Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, at New York City Presbyterian Hospital. He has also been involved with an MIT contract with the FDA. He has. He's also a teacher doing research. Before he went to MIT, he spent a year at the Department of Mathematical Science at the IBM Watson Research Center. He was given a postdoctoral fellowship the Goldstein Postdoctoral Fellowship. He has graduated 10 PhD students, 34 master students, 6 postdoctoral fellows who served underneath him. And what he is saying is that if we question obvious errors that we see in this, he said, I was warned by a colleague, you have to be very, very careful. They will destroy you. They will destroy you. And this is the Sovietization, the Stalinization of what has happened to medicine. You should never have to face that kind of, you know, professionals are risking not only their careers and livelihood, but possibly their very lives on how much harm these experimental gene-altering shots are causing. Said, when the truth and the facts are so obvious, comments vaccine impact, sensationalism is not needed. You know, we don't need to make this about giraffes dying from the vaccine. We got enough real people who are dying from the vaccine. See, when we are trying to create a headline, we're trying to get attention, what we can do is we can add false sensational details. And that is actually a business model for somebody that I used to work for. We add false sensational details to things. It winds up getting you sued, but also it destroys your credibility. But yet, it doesn't matter if you tell people that there was a sting around the election and 20,000 National Guard are out 2 days after the election, and they're already arresting people. And this whole thing was a sting set up by President Trump, and we got blockchain watermarks. It doesn't matter how much you lie to people. They will still turn in and listen. Tune in and listen. But what it does is it hurts the truth. And it destroys as we're trying to fight against these lies. That's where the real damage is. So in this article from Vaccine Impact, he talks about the work of an attorney who has, and we'll talk about this particular guy that I introduced, but the attorney, he's just one of 12 physicians and research people. People who've worked on ICU units, frontline hospital jobs. They've tried to speak to the CDC and to the FDA, but they are being shoved out and then purged out of their jobs. And he points out the lesson, again, should be that civil and individual rights should never be contingent upon a medical procedure. And again, I'll say, as I have said for the last 600 plus days, science is never finished. I've said that even longer than that. I said that when we were talking about climate change for years and years. You know, that's the same thing that they used for climate change. Well, just shut up. We've got experts over here. See their credentials? And they're saying this, so you don't question that. Or we've got more scientists who voted for this than who voted for that. And I said, well, it's always been the skeptics, it's always been the single scientist who bucked the consensus, who has always advanced science. Science is empirical. You need to be able to show us the numbers. You should have to defend your conclusions based on your numbers and your data. As a matter of fact, you should have to defend the way that you collected your data. How did you measure the temperature? How did you test people for the virus and so forth? But no, we're not allowed to question that anymore. But going back to individual consent, as he points out, whatever your views are on the vaccine itself, every American should reject letting the government decide what medical procedures they have to engage in order to participate in society. Exactly right. So let's get back to this MIT scientist, Dr. Retsif Levi. And he had this statement. He said, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. You see, you have people, and I talked about this, very poorly informed pastors. John Piper is one of them who said, well, you know, you are free. As a Christian, you don't have to worry about the politics behind this thing. Just go ahead and get the vaccine. He never questioned what the government was telling him, what the CDC was questioning. He looked at it, and because he's coming from a liberal Democrat perspective in his politics, he thinks that people are opposing this simply because of politics. And so Dr. Levi says, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat. I just happen to be a scientist that challenges the current narrative that dominates public health policies around the world, in the U.S. and in Israel. And I can tell you that I know many mainstream scientists and medical professionals who, similar to me, think that the current narrative is extremely wrong, and wrong. But very few of them are willing to speak up. I'm not sure I can blame them, because any attempt to deviate from the narrative today is faced with a wall of hostility, rejection, even elimination from the government, including funding agencies, being eliminated from public media, and worst of all, being eliminated from the scientific community itself. He said a colleague of his at MIT, who's a member of the National Academy of Engineering, told him, "You have to be careful, because you can be eliminated." See, this is like Stalinist Russia. This is exactly why, months ago, I put it out for supporters. I still haven't put it up publicly. I think I will. But I was waiting to put some kind of a video on top of it. But I put out the short essay by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, "Live Not by Lies." That's exactly what he was talking about. And it's why Rod Dreher wrote the book, "Live Not by Lies," referring back to Solzhenitsyn, but also referring to, he said, "I've had one friend of mine after the other whose parents are still alive, and they'd escaped from living under communism, and the parents are scared to death. They said everything that we lived under, that we grew up under, and under communism, we are now seeing here. People are afraid to speak when they start to talk about something that is politically incorrect." See, that's the whole thing. We talk about cultural Marxism. This goes back to political correctness for a couple of decades. This has been building steam. And that's the way it always happens. It happens gradually and progressively. It happens iteratively, as Fauci said. And so this has been building for a long time. And he said, you know, I've noticed that when I talk to people about certain political issues, we'll be in a public restaurant, he said, they'll look over their shoulder to see who's around, if anybody might hear. Because that's the way people act under an authoritarian, totalitarian regime, which is what they seek to establish. He went on to talk about academic fraud, Dr. Levi, and how he and many other scientists saw right away that what Pfizer was publishing about the results of their COVID vaccine trials was seriously flawed, and that their statements regarding efficacy were wrong. He said the only studies that were published were the ones that conformed to the mainstream narrative, and these studies are basically pure junk. He gave examples of the studies that were recently published to state that the new booster shots were effective and safe. Most of the patients that given the shots in the trial were only followed for less than 2 weeks in order for the drug companies to declare the vaccines safe and effective. So think about this. We had a situation, as Fauci and his co-conspirators decried, where you would have three phases. Each of those would last about 3 years or so, because you wanted to evaluate the long-term safety. And you also, with the vaccine, since you're not going to be doing any challenge tests, you have to go for a long period of time to let these, to have any chance that these people are going to come in contact with the disease just by living in society or in a random way. So you have two groups, you vaccinate them, you watch them for 3 years or so, and then you see how many of each group came down with whatever you're trying to protect them from. You can't, under the Nuremberg trial, you could not ever, and they didn't do it this time. You had a group of scientists who were begging them to do it. They said, no, we're not going to do that. Because why? Because they didn't believe it worked either from the very beginning. Oh, we can't ethically give somebody a vaccine for a condition and then expose them to it. That's not the way you test vaccines. We've never done that with vaccines. So you'd let it go for 3 years, and then you would take a look at the results. Well, they let this one under warp speed, they let it go for 2 months. Then when they went for the boosters, they let it go for 2 weeks. I don't even know they did 2 days with the kids. Now, this is the warp speed idea. Warp speed, getting rid of the testing, this is fraudulent, folks. This is a lie. This is corruption. This is not something to be bragged about, and yet that is still what Trump is doing as he sells this to people. Anyway, Dr. Levi said he is very critical of these journals because regarding safety, they're failing to report any negative side effects, including death. He goes on to give an example of academic censorship. He said, me and my co-authors pointed out that when you look at national emergency service calls in Israel for cardiac arrest among young individuals under 40, you see a dramatic increase of 25% of these calls that are parallel to the vaccination campaign in Israel early in 2021, and we see a statistical association with that campaign. And again, this is a guy who is involved in scientific studies and probability mathematics, cross-checking this. So he said he wrote the paper about that. He said he was not claiming that there was a causal effect with the vaccines. He said there is an association here, and it needs to be investigated. And you would do that normally, wouldn't you? Right? We had Boeing 737 MAXs. We had 8,600 flights, and we had two crashes. And, killed about 500 people. They just stopped them all. Well, let's investigate. Let's see what's going on here. Well, not this. He said, so we made it clear that we're not suggesting that there was a causal effect, but there was an association, and it needed to be investigated. We raised the concern. We called the authorities to check on what is going on. Needless to say, we never got a response from the authorities, and in fact, they went public and called this research fake. It's not fake. It's a high correlation. Cardiac arrest for individuals under 40, a dramatic increase of 25%. So he says, even more concerning, journal after journal after journal in the academic literature is rejecting this article most of the time based on the argument that, quote, it is not a priority. Well, I don't think that calling safety concerns fake is morally right. It's not scientifically right either, he said. I think it's clear these vaccines are not naive, and they have serious and unprecedented side effects. Exactly. I want to play for you while we're talking about what happens, because I've got more details about how they develop these vaccines and the corners that they cut. But I want you to first hear a report that came out of LifeSite News. This was a protest in front of the Supreme Court. A lot of people have been injured by vaccines. This professor was there. He is a college professor at Christendom College. His name is Matthew Sakonikos, I guess is the way you pronounce his name. It's a Greek name. I think it is Sakonikos. Anyway, he talks not about his injury from the COVID vaccine. He's there to support people who have been injured who are not being heard. But he's there to talk about the fact that he could not get medical help, that he was blocked by the doctors from getting medical help because he wasn't vaccinated. And he says, this whole thing woke me up to a new America that is not the America that I knew when I was growing up, when we stood for fighting atheistic Marxism. But we're seeing the United States now as it is.
After I was sick with COVID, I was pleading with doctors to help me with antivirals. I was probably about 5 days in of symptoms, and I had double pneumonia, and my fever was only getting worse. And so I was told they couldn't prescribe it. They were forbidden to prescribe it. They couldn't give me the antivirals that I'd heard of at the time was the hydroxychloroquine. No one would help me at that time with that. And they also said I would have to have rheumatoid arthritis to get that. And so I was left without any kinds of treatments, having been diagnosed with COVID, and no one prescribed me things that I was asking for that I'd heard worked and that apparently have a background in history for decades of working and assisting people as an antiviral.
What do you think was going on here?
I would suggest there's a lot of misinformation and that people are more interested in forcing vaccines on people than actually medically treating people.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your ordeal? And you told me before that you had been pro-vaccine.
I was pro-vaccine. My wife had been working in the emergency room as an RN, treating people with COVID and assisting. My sons were working in hospitals. One was delivering food. They were going through weekly nasal checks and swabs. And so they had been vaccinated already back in December and in January. And so come March, April, when I decided to get vaccinated, I was encouraging a lot of people. But 3 days later, I came down with COVID, diagnosed with COVID, and my symptoms only got worse. And And they wouldn't help me. They wouldn't get me the antivirals when I asked for them. They told me doctors wouldn't prescribe them. The people I asked wouldn't prescribe them. My primary care sent me to the ER, and the ER got my oxygen levels back above 90 and sent me home, even though they were concerned I was developing blood clots because they were testing me and my D-dimer was three times what it should be. So they sent me home, and 5 days later I crashed, and my lungs filled with pulmonary embolisms, double pneumonia, and I was in the ICU. So, and even afterwards, I couldn't get help. When my doctor prescribed ivermectin, the AMA started blocking my ability to get help by telling pharmacists not to fill ivermectin, which has been used, obviously, for decades, invented for humans. It's not horse dewormer. It's an antiparasitic, and it works as an antiviral as well. And a lot of people have known it works as an antiviral for a very long time. So not only couldn't get help when I had COVID, and then I ended up getting pulmonary embolisms because they wouldn't help me, denying me all these treatments. But even afterwards, with full knowledge and all the studies that they have, CVS would not fill my prescription, and the pharmacist told me they had orders from their headquarters not to fill prescriptions for people who were using it for COVID. And so now I couldn't even get, as a person who was trying to clear out my system from the spike protein, under doctor's orders, a medical doctor who prescribed this for me, I was blocked from getting the help I needed.
How egregious is this? That, I mean, your experience is nothing less than a nightmare.
It woke me up to the new America, that it's not the America that I knew when I was growing up, and we were proud to be American, and we stood for fighting the Soviet Union's atheistic Marxism. I'm sad to see it here in the United States as it is. Mm-hmm. And what's funny is the combination of fascism and Marxism that you now see.
Yep. What's your message to other Americans right now?
Sadly, you're on your own, because the leadership
is not there
for you at so many levels in society and government, and you need to start forming good local communities to support with each other.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
I would want to add one thing. Yeah. My stepmother, my father remarried, and after my mom passed away. And after her second vaccine, she immediately started having breathing problems and heart problems, and her doctor at the Mayo Clinic told her, don't get the booster. The doctors know there's a connection. So that's a fact.
Yeah. Wow. And so you're here today to support 19 other vaccine victims.
I'm here to support the probably thousands of people above and beyond what's been reported to VAERS, what's been reported to the CDC apart from VAERS. Right. Which pharmacies have apparently, as I've read, pharmacies have been telling doctors to report it directly to them. So all these unreported injuries that are happening, and all these people who can't get help from treatments that so many people are lying about, that when people are lying about ivermectin, to call it a horse dewormer is probably one of the worst lies and abuses that so many people know it's not true in positions of leadership. They know this is an absolute lie. To see people using the media to suppress and keep people from getting medical help is nothing less than a crime against humanity.
How do you reconcile this with your faith, and what has your faith meant to you?
As a Catholic, I'm always grateful to remember that Jesus is with us in our sufferings, that he suffered with us and for us, that he experienced death so that we could overcome death through him and by him. So I take comfort in the sufferings, that my sufferings really do have value to save other souls. I do pray for our leadership to stop going along with repeating government lines and fitting in. We're here to convert the world to Jesus Christ, who is the truth. And so truth is the only thing that's going to set all of us free. And that begins especially with doctors we thought we could trust.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
All right, and that is Matthew Sakanakis, and that is a report from LifeSight News. I think it's very important to hear somebody with integrity like that, telling what happened to him. And, of course, like you said, his family is working in hospitals. His wife was an RN. He supported vaccines. But when he got sick, the vaccine doesn't treat you when you get sick. The purpose of a vaccine is supposed to be to train your immune system. And so he wanted a treatment. He wanted an antiviral. And that's when he saw that even though he had doctor's prescriptions, he had corporations say, no, we're not going to do that. They know where their bread is buttered. Speaking of people who know where their bread is buttered, I want you to hear what Scott Gottlieb, who was the first FDA commissioner for President Trump. He is now working for Pfizer, but he was on one of the Sunday programs this last weekend, 2 days ago, and he had this to say about his concerns about the blowback as people are angry about these mandates.
Well, the public health implications I worry about is that the opposition that's forming to these COVID mandates is going to bleed into opposition to other kinds of vaccine mandates and things that we've long come to accept, like mandates on childhood immunizations for school, even mandates on healthcare workers. People are going to start to oppose. They're not going to parse opposition to mandates on this COVID vaccine to mandates to other kinds of vaccines, and you're going to see vaccine uptake generally start to decline. That's what I worry about. I think from a public policy standpoint, we need to ask ourselves, what is our goal? We vaccinated about 81% of adults over the age of 18. Where do we need to get to, and what price are we willing to pay in terms of cultural divide, acrimony, challenges, and also the creation of things like exemptions? So a lot of businesses right now are creating exemptions as a way out of these mandates, and that creates problems for the future as well.
Yeah, why does that create a problem for the future? Right? Since when should businesses be mandating stuff? See, they established this. And now he's concerned about this because, you know, he was with Trump when they helped to roll out the mandates and take away religious and medical exemptions. They'd had mandates for going to school for a long time. What they did was they took away medical and religious exemptions by, for people even going to private schools, even going to religious schools. No, no, no. You lose your exemption.
Got to get the shot.
Got to get
the shot.
That was while, Trump and Gottlieb were there. You got to get that. They were setting that precedent. Now he's worried that there's another precedent. He's worried that you're starting to realize that this is a criminal, evil cabal. This big pharmaceutical companies that he has worked for. He worked for them when he was at the FDA under Trump. He was still working for them. He's working for them openly now. And so he's concerned that as people are starting to realize the fraud behind all of this, as they're starting to look at this and say, wait a minute, why should they be the people, the only people that are held harmless for liability for their product? No matter who they harm, they don't face any consequences. And then they get subsidized by the government. What is going on here? This looks pretty evil, looks pretty corrupt. Why is this being allowed? See, once you wake up to this, once you see what big pharmaceutical companies are, you cannot unsee it. This is why I'm proud to call myself an anti-vaxxer. I'm an anti-vaxxer because I've been watching what the pharmaceutical companies have done to people for years and years. And people in my family have been injured by this. I am adamantly anti-vaxxer. And if you see the corruption, as people are starting to see now, and this is what Gottlieb is like, ooh, wait a minute, you went a little bit too far. And now people are seeing what we're really about. We're a criminal cabal. And once you see that they're a criminal cabal, you will say, well, we're not going to go with these mandates. And as a matter of fact, I think we should allow exemptions again for kids in schools, even though it was taken away by California, New York, and Trump. 2019, May. Once you see it, you cannot unsee it. Moderna's groundbreaking coronavirus vaccine was designed in just 2 days. Wait a minute. They designed it in 2 days. They tested it for 2 months. And now they're testing the boosters for 2 weeks. What a fraud this is. What a fraud. Now, this is coming from Business Insider, and they want to pretend that this was all just normal. And again, this is going back to December 19th of 2020, last year. They're bragging about the fact that they got this done at warp speed. They said, it's found to be 94.1% effective in preventing COVID in clinical trials after just 2 weeks study. Imagine that. You give it to a control group, and you give it to, and you give a placebo to the other part of the control group, and you have them mill around for 2 weeks, and then you make a conclusion about how it protected people from COVID. What a fraud. So, just 2 days, they said. And that wouldn't have been possible without the new technology called mRNA, which would also not be possible if they hadn't changed the definition of a vaccine covertly in October of 2019, just as that clip, and I won't play it again for you, the clip where Fauci is saying, how do we this other guy says, well, how do we do this? This is normally takes for 10 years to test this thing. How do we just tell everybody, here's a new vaccine, and we're going to give it to everybody in the world? When have they ever done that, giving it to everybody in the world? October 2019, Fauci says, well, we got to do it from the inside. We got to do it disruptively and iteratively. And the first iteration, what they did was that same month, October 2019, when that happened, they went in and quietly changed the definition as part of a 700-page funding bill. About page 550, they went in and they said there had been a line there where they talked about what vaccines would be, what would be included in the definition of a vaccine. And what they did was they didn't even put in the term mRNA. There was a statement in there saying synthesized polypeptides would be excluded. And so what they did in page 550 of a 700-page funding bill, they said, oh, and by the way, now that we're doing a bill, we would like to go in and subtly change the definition of a vaccine, just strike that one line. So no longer is it excluded. Now you can call something that is a synthesized polypeptide, you can now call that a vaccine. On January the 6th, you had Moderna's CEO, Stefan Bancel, had said that he was troubled by the mysterious virus outbreak. This is January the 6th of 2020, not that other January the 6th. And so you understand that if they've already put this thing together, and if they have changed the definition subtly, secretively, in a hidden way, in a bill in October, and then as part of this official narrative, they say, well, we heard about this Wuhan mystery virus January the 6th. Well, then why did they change the definition of a vaccine a couple of months before that? How convenient was that? You had, as a matter of fact, in terms of the definition of the vaccine, Thomas Massey has tweeted about this, talking about how did they also change the definition of a vaccine from saying it is something that produces immunity to something that produces protection? That's a very subtle change, but very significant, isn't it? For Moderna, inventing the jab was just the easy part. In an article looking at the finances of these different companies, they said, well, you've had a big drop-off in the stock of Moderna because they're having problems manufacturing this. They just can't ramp it up. There's so much. Is it demand or should we say command? See, we don't have a supply and demand issue anymore. We have commands. We have commands from a central managing unit, just like in the Soviet Union or in communist China under Mao, or today. They have a lot of central planning remaining there as well. But we have commands. We have a command control economy, not a supply and demand economy. It's not a free market. It's corporatism. It's fascism. It's economic fascism, merger of corporations and business. And so as a part of this, I guess they're having trouble keeping up with a five-year plan from our Stalinists in Washington. They said Pfizer can ramp up manufacturing, but Moderna is having problems. They're really struggling. But, you know, don't worry about Johnson & Johnson, new to the vaccine industry. Don't worry about Moderna and their production. Even though they're rushing to get this stuff together and to meet the commands of the government, I'm sure that there'll be no problems in terms of negligence or safety in any of this either. That's why they took off 2.6 million doses in Japan. They found little stuff floating around in them that interacted with magnets. But the next big thing, says Wired Magazine, is mRNA to fix your food. You know, we have these moles and we have pests, and we need something that's better than pesticides. And when you read this article from Wired Magazine, you realize that what they're looking for is simply something that is easier for them to get government approval for and that they can patent. They said, you know, it's a very long process to get a new pesticide approved. But we can do this very easily and very quickly. Yes, we will have to have a process where they approve the spray that we use and the bottles and the labels and things like that. But, you know, we're modifying the DNA, and we don't need any approval for that. Yeah? Is that a problem? Yeah. Because, you see, if they're going to start now spraying our food with mRNA in the name of getting rid of mold. They say, yeah, if you ever have strawberries and you leave them in the refrigerator a little bit too long, they start to get this gray-green mold on them. Well, it's a good chance that this is this particular fungus. And we're going to, you know, we've got a new $100 billion business here that we think we can do in terms of protecting food. And, of course, you know, because one of the reasons why our food is so pesticide-laden now is because Big Agro wants to extend the shelf life indefinitely. They said the downside of existing fungicides and pesticides are well known. The residue from the sprays can build up in the environment, and they can damage non-target organisms. Nowhere in this article from Wired Magazine's depiction of this, nowhere in this article is there any concern about humans. There's concern about other organisms. There's concern about the nebulous environment, but there's never a concern about human safety and any of this. And so they say they're working on a way around these problems because, you know, even though these pesticides and fungicides and these chemicals can build up and accumulate in the environment, they can accumulate in organisms. I guess they don't accumulate in humans. I guess they're not involved in the spermageddon, you know, the 60% drop-off in sperm count for people in the West. I guess it's not involved in any of all that. But they got a workaround. They said Singleton, the scientist that they're talking about, at a company called Greenlight Biosciences in Massachusetts. So Singleton is working on a way around these problems. He says his starting point is RNA, similar to DNA, fundamental building blocks of life. At some point, we're not exactly sure when, they say, cells evolved the ability to chop up and to destroy genetic material from invading pathogens like virus. In other words, we have these very complicated machines. They can, even though they're extremely, extremely small, these things are very capable. I mean, they have, you know, whenever you look at something, if I have a computer the size of a house like we had back in the, you know, 1960s. If I have a computer the size of the house and it can do some very simple things, it can calculate some numbers or whatever, or if I have another computer that fits in the palm of my hand, like an iPhone, and it can do all kinds of things and has all kinds of functions in it, but it's much smaller, which one is more sophisticated? Time's up. Of course, the iPhone is a lot more sophisticated than the UNIVAC computer of the 1950s, early 60s, or whatever. Much more sophisticated. And yet, when we look at the human body, we don't see an engineer there. Did you think that this iPhone was discovered by Steve Jobs lying around somewhere in China? And then he said, can you replicate that? Obviously, you look at an iPhone, and you know that it was built by somebody. And yet, these people, who know better, are acting like fools. They look at this and they say, at some point, we're not exactly sure when this happened. Cells evolved the ability to chop up and destroy genetic material, like viruses. And so when they put it this way, they do this for a couple of reasons. Number one, they don't want to acknowledge God exists because then they would be responsible to God, answerable to God. But also, they want to say, well, if we change this, we're intelligent, and we know what we're doing, and we're designing this. This is something that just happened by random chance processes, you know, just like the iPhone assembled itself. And so, you know, since the iPhone is just assembled, you know, just left a glass and silicon laying around and a little bit of metal, and it just all assembled itself over a period of time, of course. That took a very long time. You know, if we have enough time, anything is possible. So just as this iPhone assembled itself, these cells developed the ability to not only recognize what was harmful, but to destroy it and to remember it. And they can also repair themselves and reproduce themselves. But, of course, that just happened. There wasn't a designer behind any of that. We are the ones who are designing. And since that's just a random evolutionary process, we don't have to worry about protecting it. We don't have to think that this was created by God, who happens to know a great deal more about this than we do. We can just go in and start tampering with it willy-nilly. And so they got a handful of RNA sprays that are already involved. Developing RNA crop sprays could open up shortcuts to new pesticides. They might be able to develop pesticides at, I don't know, warp speed, especially if you drop a ton of money on them. You could have a lot of fast money, a lot of fast profits being made. Now, all of these industries are starting to get into this type of thing. They said it could open up shortcuts to new pesticides, a process that typically takes at least a decade and hundreds of millions of dollars. Wait a minute. This is sounding exactly like the vaccines, exactly like what they plotted to do in October 2019. It's very difficult to transform an existing pesticide into something new. Quote, you can tweak here and there, but if you want a new product that will have a new patent, you can't just change one thing on the surface and expect it to be new. So with RNA sprays, you take this whole dynamic and you flip it on its head. Each new spray will target a different gene, act now, or a combination of genes, in the pest that its creators want to get rid of. One spray might interfere with the genes that control fungal cell division, while another might target genes that help the fungi produce toxins. RNA Issuance AG is a company. They're working on a spray that messes with diamondback moths' immune systems, leaving them vulnerable to a wide variety of bacteria. Now, it would never do anything like that to your immune system, would it? Or to the immune system of, bees or something else that is vital to the environment? Yeah, I'm sure there'd be no downside to that at all. I mean, this is being put out here with the same kind of naivete that we used to have about harmful chemicals and pesticides. We don't even need to test those. As a matter of fact, we don't need to test 5G or any of this stuff. We just roll with it. Look at this. It does this. I don't have to worry about any health effects of that. If you can imagine, when they start randomly tinkering with something that they don't understand, and they come up with something to destroy the immune system of the diamondback moths, but of course it's not going to bother your immune system, right? And of course they will test it, right? No, the whole point of this is to make sure they don't take 10 years and hundreds of millions of dollars before they can start making money. That's the whole point. So they're not going to test it. The new spray would still have to be tested and go through approval, but it would change a great deal. Only the genetic information itself would be tweaked, and we would have to test out the packaging and the spray that carries it. But when it comes to the DNA, we don't have to worry about that. Don't worry about it. It's great. It's new. COVID-19 vaccines and myocarditis link is now being probed by researchers. This is an article from archive.fo. They say some theories center on the type of spike protein that a person makes in response to the mRNA vaccines. One new theory under examination is improper injections of the vaccine directly into a vein, which sends the vaccine to the heart muscle. It's not Moderna's fault. It's not Pfizer's fault. It's the employee at Walgreens. We've seen this before as well. I talked about the two toddlers, about 2 years old. They each dropped dead after they got the MMR vaccine in Samoa. It was widely carried in New Zealand at the time. Perhaps that explains some of the vaccine hesitancy that Jacinda Ardern is facing in New Zealand. But, this mom took her kid in, got the shot. The kid immediately dropped dead. Another mother waiting there with her child, the same age, saw that, said, we're leaving. And they pressured her into letting them do it to her child, who died right away. Maybe it wasn't refrigerated properly. Maybe there was a manufacturing error. Maybe what was it? What could have done this? Well, they decided they would blame the nurses. That is what I see happening here. So what is the problem with myocarditis? Well, it must be improper injection of the vaccine into a vein, which allows it to travel. Problem is, a couple of months ago, I talked about a study that came out of Japan that showed that the biodistribution of the spikes, the protein spikes, was all over the place. That was one of the key findings of that Japanese study, the fact that the injection was not localized to the muscle tissue where they inject it, but it spread throughout the entire body. And that's not a matter of the injection. Yes, I do not go to Walgreens to get my hair to get my health care or my haircut. I don't go to there for anything other than to buy some stuff off the shelf, perhaps. But I don't get my health care there. And you might that might be another issue. But the biodistribution of this spike has nothing to do with a faulty injection into a vein. That's the story, the cover story that they're trying to come up with. The reality is, as I continue to look at this and theorize about this, it just underscores the fact that we should have had a test. We would have been 1 year, just a little bit over 1 year, into the testing phase of this 10-year test. Instead, they short-circuited that. So now we are trying to pretend that it is completely safe and effective because we don't want any politicians or bureaucrats or corporate mavens to face any charges. You know, they're all going to be held, harmless from legal immunity. So that means that people are going to get really angry at the politicians who did this. This is why I'm so angry at Trump. And the fact that he is still a player. You know, he's not left the scene. He's left the White House, but he's not left the scene. And you need to understand how these things have been brought upon us to make sure that you stop it. But they want to pretend that there is no problem. They want to pretend that it was fully tested, and yet we're still here. Why is myocarditis soaring? Why is it no longer very, very rare? Why is it no longer rare at all? And so now people are starting to try to second-guess the mechanism here. So there may be similarities between the spike protein and proteins that are found in the heart muscle, prompting the body's immune defense to mobilize against the heart. Well, that's a theory. We don't know. Maybe it would have been nice if they would have tried that. An article from LifeSite News points out there's been a crazy spike in young athletes dying. And see, this is not something that just affects young people. They can't say that it's a comorbidity when you got a young athlete. That's their problem. They don't have any plausible lie. They don't have any plausible deniability about this. They're stuck. And so he says, remember we had a story last month about a 17-year-old hockey player in Ontario? Everything in his life and all of his aspirations centered around hockey. And he wanted to be able to get into the arenas and play, skating arenas. They wouldn't allow him in there with it. And so he reluctantly got the vaccine and then died of a heart attack. But as they point out, individual reports of deaths and permanent disabilities of young football, cricket, rugby, hockey players, dancers, and more are all over the place, and yet not in mainstream media. You don't hear anything about it. That's why when you have these frauds with QAnon who come out and talk about we think that three giraffes died with a vaccine, they will run that story, and they'll debunk that story. But they won't run the stories about why is it that we have so many athletes that are having this happen to them. Dr. Michael Yaden, former vice president of Pfizer, said these vaccines induce the body to manufacture unregulated amounts of virus spike protein. That's what I've said from the very beginning. I said, so you push this stuff in and it starts turning your body into a manufacturing facility. And I said, how do you stop that? How do you stop that? How do you turn that off? Well, it's not regulated in any way. So it's completely unregulated. It becomes a chain reaction. He says it's unregulated, the amounts of the virus spike protein. Not only are the amounts uncontrolled in any way, but we have no idea in any given individual where in the body this dangerous protein is being made. He concluded, I surmise that all these sports people are being injured and killed by the COVID-19 vaccines. Young people are not at risk from this virus. And they're also very poor at passing it on because their immune systems are eliminating it. Anyway, he says, there is therefore no reason why these people have been vaccinated. And it is pressure from their clubs and their leagues that have made them comply. And so they've got a long list of dozens of people in this article at LifeSite News. I'm not going to read them because a lot of these people they're all over the world. I would just be murdering their names, and their names are nobody that you would know. You know, these were just young people. Some of them were professional athletes. Some of them were not. But I see a cricketer here, cardiac arrest. I see so many of these that are identified as footballers These are what we would call soccer players in the U.S. And the thing about this that is really key, I think, is that when you look at a soccer player versus an American football player, I mean, the American football players, they do a lot of weight training and they're strong and, they, you know, but these guys who are soccer players, what do? They run for an hour or however long the game lasts. I mean, it's 60 minutes of playing time, I think. So it's several hours. They're constantly running. And so they're typically very thin and fit, but they're runners more than anything else. And they don't, you know, have a scrimmage and then wait and go back and huddle and think about what they're going to do next. And, you know, and then they don't shuffle out one team and then put another one in, you know, with all the pauses in between the stuff with football. It's not to denigrate the physical fitness of American football players. I'm just saying these guys are constantly running. And there is no substitution, really, that happens with them. They typically play the entire game. So when you look at, here's one football player, cardiac arrest, another one collapsing on the field, another one heart attack on the field, another footballer collapsing in the changing room, passing away due to a heart attack after the game in France. In German, another footballer collapses after the game and dies due to a heart attack. In Belgium, a football player suffers a cardiac arrest on the pitch. World Cup qualifier, referee has taken out due to his heart issues. You have a midfielder, also soccer or football, collapsing during the game. Another footballer, cardiac chest pain during a match. Another one collapsing from cardiac arrest in Norway. A French triathlete suffers a pulmonary embolism following Moderna. You have a Belgian pro cyclist ending the career due to heart issues. On and on and on. I could keep going with this. And I've talked about many others. And here's one of the most recent ones, Gateway Pundit, Florian Daguri, the world's top static freediver. These are people who dive very deep without having any scuba gear. And you see the pictures of them. You know, they have a rope that goes down and they keep one hand on the rope and just, you know, see how far down they can go and come back. This guy was able to hold his breath for 10 minutes and 30 seconds. He was the world record holder in that. And then he got vaccinated. He said, after my second dose, I noticed that my heart rate was way higher than normal and my breath hold capacities had gone down significantly. During sleep, he said, I am at 65 to 70 beats per minute. I'd be happy if my heartbeat got down. Anyway, instead of 37 to 45 beats per minute. That's where he was going because he was in such amazing shape. He said, during the day, I'm now always over 100 beats per minute. Instead of 65, even when I sit down and relax, once I even reached 177. Now that's extremely high beats per minute while I was just having dinner with friends. This is a guy, deep diver. I mean, he could hold his breath for 10 and a half minutes. They go down, I don't know how many feet, you know, 150 meters or whatever they say, right? 450 feet down. The pressure is amazing. You know, I did some scuba diving. The pressure doubles atmospheric pressure. You add another atmosphere of pressure every, 32, 33 feet. I don't remember now. And so he's going down 450 feet. You know, every time you go down another 32, 33 feet, that's another atmosphere of pressure. It gets to be really amazing. That's why people get the dives, get the bends. And, these guys don't have to worry about that because they are, they're not staying down long enough to get the bends. And since they're not breathing something under that kind of crushing pressure that deep, they don't have to worry about embolisms. You know, if you are a scuba diver, the one thing you do not want to do is take a breath, even when you're down at 30 feet. You don't want to breathe in from those pressurized tanks and then hold your breath with a full lung capacity and then go up to the surface. If you do, your lungs will pop. So that was the first thing they stressed to us. You always are breathing out when you're ascending. Always breathe out. And so this guy could go down eight. He says now his heartbeat, this guy's heartbeat, 177 beats per minute when he's having dinner with friends. He said, I went to a cardiologist, and he told me, that's just a common side effect of the Pfizer vaccine, nothing to worry about. It'll pass. Well, he said, 40 days after the second jab, I'd had no progress, so I went to see another cardiologist, and I got diagnosed with myocarditis. And so this highlights why we go to get second opinions and why we should have informed consent. Because just because somebody is a doctor with an MD after their name doesn't mean that they're right. We always want to get second opinions. And so he goes to another doctor, and he diagnoses him with myocarditis. He says, I'm now struggling. He goes, I'm now struggling to reach an eight-minute breath hold. And he says, this is a 30% decrease in my diving performance, roughly. Well, this is doing this to these people who are in incredible shape. When it's doing this to somebody who is a world record holder and now it's decreased his breath capacity by 30%, it's raised his heartbeat while he's eating to 177. What do you think this is doing to the rest of us? In Belgium, you have 71% of hospitalized COVID patients in the Flemish hospitals are fully vaccinated. And this is in an area that claims that they have 74% of the people vaccinated. In other words, it's not doing anything. You have the same percentage of people in the hospital hospitalized as you do the same percentage of people who are vaccinated. It hasn't done anything to reduce it whatsoever. And, of course, the games that they play in terms of talking about people who are fully vaccinated, the games that have been played by Rochelle Walensky, Information Liberation, goes back and says, remember, and put a screenshot of all the different headlines, all the different media from The Hill, from CNN, from Fox News, from CNET, and on and on and on. 99% of COVID deaths are now from unvaccinated people. Over and over again, you hear this. Well, that's simply not true. And they play with the definition of unvaccinated. Remember that you're not unvaccinated until 2 weeks after your second jab. And so if you die right away, as so many of these people have, that is not counted. Colorado hits 80% vaccination rate, and the hospitals are in crisis. And so then you have KHN.org. This was a Drudge report. Patients went into the hospital for care. After testing positive, some of them never came out. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Why would Drudge, pharmaceutical salesman that he is, why would he put something up there like that? Well, the bottom line is that they are trying to make the case here that that not of medical malpractice in terms of failing to treat people, but what they're talking about here are people who went into the hospital for something. They weren't sick with COVID at all. They tested negative. They kept testing them and testing them and testing them. They would keep them there for maybe 2 weeks because they needed to have a hip surgery or something. This is a guy who is a retired pharmacist, 66 years old. He had an infection that needed to be cut out of his hip, flesh and bone. I don't know if maybe he had a hip replacement or something. They put him in, and he was not sick. They kept him for 13 days. And then he gets sick. And what this article does not talk about is the fact that they don't have any treatment. They've got a vaccine. You get sick, sorry. No, we're not going to give you any treatments because that would be something that would impinge on people getting the vaccine. We want this to be as deadly as possible. And we have incentives to put you on a ventilator. We have incentives to keep testing you, to get you sick, and to find that. As a matter of fact, they talk about the fact that more than 10,000 patients were diagnosed with COVID in the hospital. They were admitted for something else. They didn't have it when they went in, but while they stayed there, they got sick with it. So that's 10,000 patients. Each of them, each of these hospitals, got a $13,000 bonus for finally getting them sick with COVID. That's $130 million, folks, plus a 20% bonus on everything they do to these people. And they're giving, and this is what is not being talked about in this article. This article is essentially trying to sell vaccine mandates for nurses. That's what this is about. I was wondering, what is the angle here that they're pushing? Because it's not about maybe we need to do a better job of treating. Since we are having people who are getting this in the hospital and dying in the hospital, maybe we ought to think about what we're doing. Maybe what we're doing is as ineffective as leeches and mercury that were given to George Washington when he got a cold and killed him. He didn't die from the cold. He died from the leeches and the mercury. And these people are dying from the leeches and the mercury in our medical system right now. But they make it all about the masks. Oh, you need to mask up these nurses. And you need to make sure that they're vaccinated, and on and on. We'll be right back. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, we're going to be joined by GoTree in the next hour. We're going to talk a little bit about crypto and cybersecurity, but I want to, in this segment here, I want to talk a little bit about the state of the mandates as they're rolling out everywhere. We have CNBC reporting that the White House is telling businesses to proceed with a vaccine mandate in spite of the court-ordered pause. So he doesn't pay attention to it. And quite frankly, he doesn't have to. We have a separation of powers. I mentioned over and over again throughout the Trump administration. I said, yeah, he seems to like Andrew Jackson. He sees himself as Andrew Jackson. Well, then what you need to do is what Andrew Jackson did. Even though Andrew Jackson was wrong about his relocation of the Cherokee, the Trail of Tears, he said, well, they've issued their opinion. Let's see them enforce it. And that's why Alexander Hamilton and others said that the judicial branch was the least dangerous because it had no power to enforce anything. So Biden has no legitimate constitutional authority for these edicts, none. And the court is absolutely right about that. He has no authority for his edict. But on the other hand, he is a separate branch of the government, and he can nullify what they're doing. So what is the correction to this? Well, just as he can nullify and ignore the court decisions, which, by the way, you know, Trump pretended that he could not get rid of the previous executive order of Obama about DACA. He said, well, there's nothing I can do about it. I have to wait to see what the court says. I'm like, what are you talking about? And the politicized court said, no, you can't. We're going to go with the Obama executive order. Even though you're president now, you don't get to change that. Oh, okay. All right. Same thing about immigration policy and other ways and many other issues. What you do when you have a president who ignores the Constitution, as Biden has done with these edicts, then the appropriate response would be for another branch of government and the federal government that has authority to enforce things, and that would be the Congress, to impeach him. But of course, that's not going to happen because it's his party and we're totally politicized. So then you have the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, and that would be the appropriate response would be for the states to nullify, to refuse to comply, and to protect. That becomes complicated because of our income tax laws, because of direct taxation that has been put in with that law, regardless, and don't write me about the income tax law. I'm not talking about whether it was legitimate or the right thing to do, legally passed. I'm saying that with the way it is set up, you have banks complying with that, whether it's legitimate or not, they are complying with that, and they're going to confiscate the money out of your account and give it to Biden. And so what do we do about this? It has to be opposed, but it's difficult to do that, but it has to be opposed by states. It has to be opposed by local officials. The lesser magistrate has to get involved with this and other branches. But again, he's just ignoring it. And this is not the first time that he's ignored a court order that is right when he is wrong. So White House on Monday said businesses should just move forward with the testing requirements for private businesses despite a federal court order. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. And again, full vaccination by January the 4th. The Republican National Committee has said that they've also filed a lawsuit. There's 26 state attorneys general. And as I mentioned yesterday, it's about four or five different district courts are going to hear the cases. The first one we got was the Fifth Circuit Court. And that was where you had the judge who put the temporary restraining order on this and said, I want to get more information from you. By 5 o'clock yesterday, not clear if they even bothered to comply with that. Instead, Biden told everybody, just ignore them. And so there's going to be several other court decisions out there, four or five of them. And now the Republican National Committee has filed a lawsuit in D.C., in the D.C. Court of Appeals. Quite frankly, I think this is a bad strategy because all these courts are known for their political orientation. It's one of the reasons why the court case in Louisiana, conservative judges who are going to stick to the law, stick to the written text. And so that's one of the reasons why they did that one first. When the Republican National Committee does this in order to show that they're doing something and they do it in Washington, D.C., that may backfire because then they'll wind up with a decision favoring Biden and people say, well, look, we have one court that says this, another court that says that. That will only strengthen his ability to ignore this. I was sent this by a listener who was just got hired to work for Cisco, and then they kicked in this update saying, well, no, you will get vaccinated, and you will show us your certificate before you start. Thank you for your interest in Cisco. We would like to make you aware of a change to our vaccination policy based on Biden administration's recent executive order. These people are going to go just as if none of this had happened. Just as if, and by the way, this policy that they have put here does not reflect the OSHA order that eventually came out after 2 months. Instead, what they're doing is this is not based on his executive order, this Cisco thing. This is based on his press conference. It's not based on anything that was filed in the National Register, not based on a rule or regulation. It was based on his press conference that you have to be fully vaccinated or have an approved medical or religious accommodation. No, he put in the exception for testing in this as well. And yesterday, you had in Los Angeles, one of the country's strictest measures come into place. And here's the LA protest. It began yesterday. Strict measures. The new rule covers businesses ranging from restaurants to shopping malls to theaters, nail and hair salons. And then they talk about one particular restaurant, Blue Bottle Coffee. Had a sign on the front door reminding patrons to show proof of vaccination to have permission to eat indoors. L.A., San Francisco, New York City are requiring people to show proof of vaccination to enter businesses and venues. And if you think it isn't coming to you, remember, it's the same places that locked down right away after that Friday the 13th declaration of an emergency by Trump over the weekend. You had these same places, New York and California, locked down. The rest of the country followed them into this suicidal OCD behavior. So in L.A. yesterday, as this is kicking off in Los Angeles, you had thousands of people gather in front of the Los Angeles City Hall to protest the mandate for all the city workers. Look at this. This is video. Somebody's driving by so you can see the full scope of the crowd. I say thousands is, I would say that is very, very, very conservative. But of course, that's coming from the mainstream media, KTLA, talking about thousands of people. One person attending the rally said, I'm here to show support for the men and women in law enforcement, the firefighters, those working in sanitation, who are here not so much against being vaccinated or against the vaccine, but they're against being forced to do so by our local government. As a matter of fact, the local sheriff there in L.A. County held a press conference, and I'll play just a little bit of this for you. This is not anywhere close to the entire press conference. It went for 40 minutes. He took a lot of questions from people. But this is Villanueva, Alex Villanueva, the sheriff of L.A. County.
Sheriff of Los Angeles County, Alex Villanueva.
We're here to talk about the vaccine mandate and what the impact means here in Los Angeles County. And this is, you know, there's when you make policy decisions and when you do a policy analysis, probably some of the first steps you need to do is actually see what is the impact of a proposed policy prior to putting the policy in play. And what we've had happened with the Board of Supervisors in their August motion is they put the policy in play first, and then now they're trying to scramble to figure out what the impact is going to be. And people are saying, well, I've been talking about hypotheticals. No, we actually have some hard data that we have to live with, and this is the consequences of bad policy making. As you can see right here, the retirements, that number 19.8 are rounded off to 20%. That's 102 people that are already filed for early retirement. And the people that are filing for early retirement, these are people that have the institutional knowledge. They're the experts in so many different capacities: homicide investigators, crisis negotiators, senior patrolmen. I mean, all kinds of different positions these people occupy, investigators. And these are the people that are starting to walk away. That number is significant. People with 28 years of plus of service, that's 1,605 sworn right there. And that is literally probably half of, I'm just picking on one bureau alone, that's probably half of our homicide bureau right there. Those are the people that can retire, and they're not going to lose any money behind retiring because they've already maxed out their retirement benefits and they can simply just walk away because they're just fed up with the nonsense going on in county government. Now these people, 238, that's the number of people who have filed for leaving the department in different ways, transferring to other agencies outside of L.A. County, outside of the state of L.A., some people switching careers. These are numbers that people already submitted paperwork. Workers' compensation claims. The saying is that people vote with their feet. Now, we've also seen a 22% rise in workers' comp claims. That's 315 more people than the same time last year. And again, this is all related to the COVID response or the vaccine mandate. Remember that 22%, also remember the 20% from the early retirements. Those two numbers alone, that's 417 individuals. Add the 238, now we're up to 655 people that are already putting in motion plans to leave the department, or they're already gone from the department. That's significant. The next. So subject to termination, these are people who are not vaccinated, are registered in the Fulgent system. That's the grand number right there, 4,185. If you look at the sworn number, 3,137, that is the size of almost our entire patrol operation right there. Similar, it's almost the size of our entire custody division operation. So imagine what would happen if every one of these was forced or was terminated. What would the department look like? All right, go on.
Pretty amazing.
So we compared with other counties, what's going on with other counties that surround us. Turns out, every single one has a no.
And so that's what he's saying. He says, look, we have a lot of our deputies who can't afford to live in L.A. And they're living in these surrounding counties. So a lot of them are saying, you know, I could just leave you and go to work over here. But this is, and this is a story by Brandon Smith, who I interviewed last week on Zero Hedge. Courageous L.A. County Sheriff tells the truth about the COVID vaccine mandates. He used cold, hard data, says Brandon, to show thousands of personnel and deputies, 30% of the department, will be leaving or forced out of work by L.A. County if these move forward. And already they're having massive exodus. Sheriff Villanueva rightly reminded reporters that COVID mandates are not laws. This is the key thing. I didn't grab all of that. I just wanted you to see the numbers that he was talking about with that. And by the way, he says, keep in mind that the sheriff is vaccinated, but he continues to defend the rights of his deputies to make personal informed decisions on the jab. So they said the reporters, even though he told them, they said, "Why? How are you defying the law?" "I'm not defying the law. This is not a law. This is a dictate by the city council." Reporters didn't seem to understand, says Brandon. One of them even suggested this argument was semantics. It is not semantics. If mandates are laws, then our country's legal system is done. We live under a dictatorship. If mandates become law, and we're not going to pay any attention to actual law, laws are passed by legislators. They're voted on by the citizens of the U.S. The vaccine mandates are what is called color of law. As a matter of fact, what we need to do, we need to go on offense. We need to start, maybe one of the things that some of these sheriffs need to do is to actually arrest and get prosecuted these people who are acting under color of law, pretending that they have the authority to do things for which they have no authority. Perhaps it will end when we get to that level. Or maybe we can also get somebody like this Florida sheriff.
So just chill out. You know, drink a 7-Up, eat a moon pie, quit murdering people.
That's right. Quit murdering people with these vaccine mandates. Quit destroying the country. Quit destroying families. Quit destroying people's lives. Hundreds of thousands of people are going on a 4-day nationwide strike over the vaccine mandates, reports the Epoch Times. And they said that this was going to kick off yesterday with the protests in Los Angeles. They certainly had a good turnout there. The Golden Gate Bridge rally is going to be an epic, unprecedented moment in time. It will mark on Veterans Day evening a 4-day nationwide walkout by rank-and-file workers everywhere, from blue-collar to white-collar, black, white, yellow, red, every faith, every creed, who are uniquely united despite their differences on one common truth. The vaccine mandates have no place in a free society, said one of the organizers. I said for the longest time that what we need to come together on is individual liberty. We need to come together on the Bill of Rights. That is something that unites us. And this is why the people in the media, as well as in politics, the people in the media, and that includes the alternative conservative media, they want to keep dividing us because that is good for them. That's good for their business model. And even if they are being targeted by government for censorship, when you look at an organization like Breitbart or another one like InfoWars, it is still good for their readership to polarize people. Even though they're not doing this to satisfy the government, that kind of polarization, that kind of division over people, that is good for them. They don't want you coming together and working together for individual liberty. They don't want that. Employees with religious exemptions, said one person talking about Amtrak. At Amtrak, the people with exemptions are either one, denied with no explanation, or two, they were approved for unpaid personal leave, not allowed to seek other work, while they're on what they call involuntary personal leave. So we'll just put you over here in the corner. You can't get another job. You can't get unemployment. If you do anything else, we will say that you quit. And we're still not going to pay you any unemployment. I would just say this. If the companies that are doing this, that's horrific and it's horrible. But when you see companies that are doing this, companies that do not respect your religious freedom, that do not respect your medical choices, do not respect you as a fellow human being, this is an evil company. It is a corrupt company. And you really don't want to work for them anymore. So now you know. And now it is time for you to begin starting your life anew. I mean, think of it that way. Now I know. Now I know that big pharmaceutical companies are corrupt and protected by the government, that they have no liability. Now that you know that, now that you know these people are criminals, that they're mafia, that our government is corrupt, you can't unsee that and you need to move on. And the same thing is true of your employer. If your employer is part of this cabal, move on. There's other things you can do in your life. Start thinking about that. Eric Mallow, who works for the railroad, said the longer we comply with their tyranny, the worse this will get. We were absolutely essential last year. Now we are completely expendable. One person working for Raytheon as a systems engineer for 18 years, Kristen Grace, said, I will lose my livelihood on December the 8th. because I won't allow an experimental gene therapy to be injected into my bloodstream. I have recovered from COVID, and I work from home. But the government has claimed authority over my body and my medical choices, and I choose natural, God-given immunity over the government. Well, I just want to emphasize again to Kristen Grace, I wish she was a listener, or he, I think it's a woman with a first name like that, but the executive order, so-called executive order that I was talking about before, the press conference that was done at the beginning of September, 2 months ago, they have worked around with this and they have put in some exceptions. And now if you work from home and you work as a remote worker, and I took a question about that yesterday. If I recall correctly, it was page 53 of 463 of 490 pages. And I didn't show it on there, but I read it to you. Page 63 of the 490-page published rule, or whatever you want to call it, from OSHA, says if you work from home, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do the testing. You don't have to do the vaccine. Make sure you understand that. And I wish I could get that to her because you need to understand and take a look at what this new rule is about. And I cut that out and put that out as a separate video yesterday just because I wanted to emphasize that to people. I don't want people walking away, and I want them challenging these companies who are still, this was a press conference that he gave 2 months ago, and there is absolutely no authority for these companies to be doing this. If they terminate you for this, this is wrongful termination, and you should sue their pants off. And I hope people do. And I also put up yesterday as a separate video, I spent time on the different points that were made in this successful challenge on Saturday at the Fifth Circuit Court. All the many different ways that this is hypocritical, flawed, illegal, and many, if not most, of those arguments would apply if you challenge them individually. So again, take a look at that. That could possibly help you. DeSantis has announced four bills to stop the Biden employer vaccine mandate. And I'm glad to see this. Yes, use everything that you can. Challenge them with lawsuits. And I'm glad that the various state attorneys, generals are challenging this. I don't see that the RNC needed to get involved, especially bringing something up in D.C. where they're probably going to lose because they will not consider anything rationally there. But I think it's fine, 26, 27 different state attorneys general challenging this. However, that's not the only tool that government has. And the New American, Alex Newman at newamerican.com, points out that DeSantis has announced several bills to stop Biden employer vaccine mandates. You have the separation of powers, very clearly spelled out, the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. So there's things that a governor can do. A governor can issue his own executive orders to challenge a president who has exceeded his authority as president. And he can block them and should. And that's a lot of what we have seen from DeSantis. And this is one of the things I appreciate about DeSantis. He just hasn't sat on the sidelines and saying, well, I got my legal department on it. There's nothing else I can do. My hands are tied. No, there's plenty of things you can do. And the legislature in Florida is putting together bills to stop this as well. So they're challenging it legislatively with executive orders and many other ways. So that's good to do that. Now, I've had a lot of people who've sent me, and I've reported it on page 1109 of that bill, that in Florida, DeSantis and the GOP in Florida challenged and opposed mandates and passports by private companies. And they were right to do that. And they were the only ones to do that. And still one of the few at the time, they were the only ones doing that. And still there's not very many others that are doing that. Most of them are doing head fakes like Kristi Noem saying, well, we're not going to do anything to tell private companies what they can do. They can fire you if they want. They can kick you out of public accommodations if they want. No, you shouldn't do that. But also in that bill, buried in there, page 1100, was existing language in Florida law that empowers a Surgeon General to call for a vaccine mandate. And a lot of people have talked about this. And one of these four bills is to address that issue and to get rid of that, to remove that. That was already there. And it was carried forward They've listened to people, I think. You know, it's important for us to speak up when they do the wrong thing, not to give them a pass and say, well, I like all these other things DeSantis has done, so we'll give them a pass on this. No, criticize them for that. And to their credit, they're talking about doing something about that, to eliminate the existing language in Florida law that would empower the Surgeon General to call for a vaccine mandate. And I mean, put you under quarantine and stick that in your arm like Alan Dershowitz wants to do. DeSantis said no cop, no firefighter, no nurse should be losing their jobs because of these jabs. We've got to stand up for people and protect those jobs and protect their livelihoods and protect other people. Speaking of governors, one listener, John, sent this to me. He said, I find it interesting that the MAGA crowd is idolizing Glenn Youngkin as the savior of Virginia. Turns out that he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. You know, Eric Peters said that from the very beginning. So Vince Agnelli, oh, yeah, he's just an establishment Republican. Don't get your hopes up. Watch this guy. If he does the right thing about something, absolutely get behind him and applaud him for it. But don't ever marry these people because of the party that they're in or because you like them personally or whatever. You look at their policies and hold them accountable for that. We've got a Democrat governor who, for whatever reason, Kansas Governor Laura Kelly, announced on Friday that she opposes the Biden vaccine mandates. I don't care why she's opposing it. I'm glad she's opposing it. I mean, it could just be that she's smart politically. She doesn't want to commit political suicide. So whatever her reasons are, if she's going to oppose it, good. Congratulate her for it. She said, I reviewed the rule, and after reviewing it, I oppose it. While I appreciate the intention to try to keep people safe, a goal that I share, I don't believe this directive is the correct or most effective solution for Kansas. And yet at the same time, as I pointed out, you got Scott Gottlieb out there, a Republican, and he's looking at this. You know, he was Trump's first FDA guy, and he's a pharmaceutical guy. Let's understand, his real loyalty is not the Republican Party. It's the pharmaceutical companies. And so his thing, as he pointed out on Face the Nation this last weekend, was, you know, from a policy standpoint, he said, we need to ask ourselves, what is our goal? He said, people are going to start to oppose this. They're not going to parse their opposition to mandates just to this COVID vaccine. I played that clip for you before. He said they're going to apply this to other vaccines. In other words, they're going to see us as corrupt, thieving cartel, which we really are. If they see who we are, then they're going to get pretty angry about removing these exemptions for medical exemptions and for religious exemptions on all the vaccines. And they're going to start asking, why do we get legal immunity for the products that are harmful that we produce? And he said, and you're going to see vaccine uptake generally start to decline. And that's what I'm worried about. It's going to give the pharmaceutical industry a well-deserved black eye. As a matter of fact, they should have several black eyes and some broken arms over this thing. He says, I think from a public policy standpoint, we need to ask ourselves, what is our goal? We vaccinated about 81% of the adults over the age of 18. So when we get to that, what price are we willing to pay in terms of cultural divide, acrimony, and challenges? In other words, you know, maybe we should just kind of back off a little bit and count our money for a while, because if we keep pressing this, it's going to blow up in our faces. So please, Biden, continue to press. That's what I was counting on. I was counting on that. I said, first of all, I can't vote for Trump after what he did to us in 2020 with this emergency, with this lockdown, with telling the middle class you're not essential. There's absolutely no way I can support that guy at all for anything. I wouldn't vote for him for dog catcher. But I said, our best hope right now is that Biden will revert to his nature. That in spite of, he won't do the smart thing. He'll do the thing that is built into his nature, and he'll be as authoritarian as possible. There's massive pushback now happening all over the world. Here's a big protest along the New South Wales-Queensland border over the weekend against the vaccine mandates and the passports. And this is not being covered in the legacy media. Look at that massive crowd. Absolutely amazing how big that is. And that's in Melbourne, Australia. Glad to see that happen. And yet at the same time, we still have these Australian officials saying things
and
like
what
this.
What's so incredible is that these teams are not just knocking on doors anymore. They're actually carrying Eskies and vaccinating at the door. They're seeing how many people in that household, and they're vaccinating everyone who's eligible in that home while they knock on that door. And that's what we have to do.
Now, you just saw the massive crowd marching right there in Melbourne. They don't have a pandemic. There is no emergency. Why are they sending people door to door, vaccinating people, running on them? We don't have to come in. Just, you know, roll up your sleeve and stick your arm out. I'll do it right here at the door. Why is that happening? You got to ask yourself. Once you see that, that's what Scott Gottlieb is concerned about. Once you see that corruption, once you see that they are hell-bent on vaccinating people, that's the point that this really turns around for good. Thousands are marching in protest of the vaccine passports in Italy. It was a couple of weeks ago on a Friday that they put their mandates through and said even though 10% of the country was unvaccinated, they said you will not work, you will not be in the public place. They said police headquarters reported about 8,000 people involved in the demonstrations, and certainly there was probably a lot more than that. They always will underreport that. Meanwhile, about another 4,000 no green pass protesters marched in Milan on Saturday, the 16th such demonstration in Milan. Some carried a cardboard coffin draped with the Italian flag and adorned with carnations to mark the funeral of freedom. The funeral of freedom. That's right. That's what's dying. And as I briefly mentioned yesterday, they have now decreased the COVID death count by 97%. You know, it bothers me when I go to these conservative news aggregators, and now one of them has got a counter where they're counting Biden's deaths. It's like, are you kidding me? It was absurd for people to do that with Trump. And all you're doing is you become exactly what you oppose. You're nothing but a bunch of Democrats wearing a different color. It's just disgusting to see that. Why are we pushing that lie? Why would Trump push as he's campaigning? I saved 2 million people. Just stop it. Just stop the lies. We've seen through this. This is not an emergency when you got massive crowds like that protesting, shouting, all put together. They're not having. This is not the first time they've done this. And they're not getting some kind of a massive surge out of this. There should be a surge. Everybody's going to die here. You know, they're going to die if you go to Sturgis. It's going to be a Sturgis surge for the motorcycle. That didn't happen. It's going to be a surge based on all the football games. No, it didn't happen. It's going to be a surge based on the demonstrations. None of it happened. It's done. It wasn't ever a pandemic. Never a pandemic. Yeah, people got sick with some stuff, and they gave them a lot of really, really bad treatment to kill them. That's what the pandemic has always been, malpractice, and now it's this toxic genetic code injection. So they said they went back and they looked at the numbers, and they said the Italian Higher Institute of Health has drastically reduced the country's official COVID death toll number by 97%. Instead of saying that 130,000 people had died from COVID, they now say 4,000. When are we going to ever have that kind of honesty here? So the official count was 130,468. They've now downgraded that to 3,783. They said that that is the biggest number they can come up with that is directly attributable to the virus alone. All the other Italians who have lost their lives have had between 1 and 5 comorbidities. As a matter of fact, as I pointed out before Trump declared his emergency order, we had 2 weeks' worth of data out of Italy. It showed the average age 1 week was just was like 80.1 years. The other week was 79.5, and they had an average of 2.6 comorbidities. But nevertheless, they're still kicking people out. 10% of the people kicked out of work in Italy, even though they've now said, well, it wasn't 130,000, it was under 4,000. Still, they will not change. So as the bottom line of this article says, if you do what the Italian government did, and if you strip away age and comorbidities from the death count, it's just another flu. So, yeah, we can't say that. And again, on Friday, we had essentially a V for Vendetta episode in the UK. People putting on the Guy Fawkes mask and big demonstration there in Parliament Square. For months, Attending events and protests was outlawed in the UK, as was meeting with friends and family, but they are now pushing very hard on that. I got this letter from a listener saying, my eyes have been opened, and I just, it's a very hopeful letter, and I've got to say, as I have said many times, maybe this is why she wrote, because I said, you know, I see what's happening on Gab, and people are just so in to the Trump support there, even though Trump won't have anything to do with Gab or Andrew Torba. I mean, he's completely rejected them, reportedly because of Jared Kushner, and yet people are rabid supporters of Trump. And I just put up a video that says something about the Trump shot or the Trump juice or the Trump Kool-Aid. Boy, they get upset with those titles or those descriptions. It's like raving a red flag in front of them. And so she says, I once wrote to you a couple months ago to let you know that I had stumbled on your show via Gab. And that message, I stated how it took me a while to get past your obvious disdain for Trump. While I'd said I wasn't totally immersed in the MAGA cult, I had voted for him twice. That was largely due to the influence of the late Rush Limbaugh. There are many times initially that I wanted to turn you off and never listen to you again. And many people have. Let me say, I got turned off by my employer, but I was actually kind of turned off by his cheerleading and his sycophancy and his 4D chess nonsense. But anyway, yeah, so I've been purged in a lot of places because I don't like Trump. I don't fit in anywhere. You know, they purge me because I talk about election corruption. I talk about surveillance. I talk about the fraud of this pandemic, the danger of the vaccine. I oppose climate change, yada, 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 all this. So I'm purged, you know, I've been kicked off seven times off of YouTube. I've been purged out of PayPal, Venmo, Spotify. They're the same people that pay tens of millions of dollars to Joe Rogan. Oh, I'm too controversial for them, evidently. And so, you know, I've been kicked off all these different places, but I don't fit in the conservative media either because I don't cheer Trump. You know, they know where their bread is buttered, and they don't really care what's happening in this country. They don't really care what's happening in the Constitution to individual liberty, to freedom and dignity. They'll go along with the B.F. Skinner program. They really will, if there's money in it. So anyway, I'm sorry. Getting back to our letter. I believe that you took your animus for Trump a little too far, but time after time I found myself returning to your show because I liked and agreed with most everything else you talked about. I admit that until 2 weeks ago, if Trump had become the Republican candidate in 2024, I would have planned on voting for him as the lesser of two evils once again. However, when he made the comment to Bill O'Reilly that he wouldn't have to mandate the shots because he'd be able to convince the people, I was officially done with the man then and there. A large percentage of his most ardent supporters are opposed to these deadly shots, yet he's still out there peddling them, despite the boos he gets from his base. And I got to say, the most astounding thing that I've seen, Trump, even more, I found it even more amazing than what he said. Well, I wouldn't have to mandate it because I could sell it. And that was what I said from the very beginning. I said, no, he would do it like Scott Gottlieb says. You know, let's not get people upset. We don't want to blow back against our product here. So he would have been a big pharmaceutical salesman. But the thing that I found the most amazing was in that article that he had with Judge Jeanine. It wasn't this Saturday. I think it was the Saturday before last. When she said, all these people who are getting fired, all these heroes, these law enforcement people and firefighters, they support you. Shouldn't you have fired Fauci? And he said, it's not him, it's Biden. He defended Fauci. And, of course, he wouldn't fire Fauci, even though people were yelling and screaming at him with the rally that he had just before the election and demanding that he fire Fauci. Well, we'll see. I'll think about it, but just vote for me now. I don't know what I'll do. He's still defending Fauci. All he is about is the partisan game to get himself in. Oh, they really hate each other. That hatred is genuine there. But he does not love the Constitution or his supporters. He defends Fauci as he always did. Anyway, so he's still out there peddling the vaccines despite the boos that he gets from his base or the many reports of death and physical impairment inflicted by the people with this evil serum. I don't understand why many of them cannot wake up to see him for the charlatan that he is, but thankfully I do know of a few who have begun to see the light, and there are more of us than you realize. Well, I hope that's the case. See, my animus for the man, I do have animus for what he did, and I just want to keep him from doing any more damage, and I'm not letting go of it. I don't care what happens. She says, like you, I realize just how broken our whole system is. Like you, I realize the corruption runs so deep that no one man, no one political party is going to be able to fix it. Thank God I'm a blood-bought, born-again believer in Jesus Christ, and I know how all this will end. Perhaps sooner than any of us realize, given what is going on globally. My king is Jesus, not Biden, not Trump, not any other person on this earth. My husband's job is now threatened, like millions of others, due to the OSHA rollout. But we're not living in fear. The Bible tells us over and over again to fear not, and we are clinging to that. We've seen the Lord come through for us, sometimes even before we knew we were about to be in a precarious situation, time and again, and we know that he will not fail us this time. So if there's one thing that March 13th, 2020, through the present day has done for both my husband and I, is that we've disconnected from the things and the distractions of this world. We've lost friends, all of who claim to be Christians, over the refusal to get these shots, but we press on. I'm reminded of the hymn, I've decided to follow Jesus, specifically the lines, though none go with me, I still will follow. And the world behind me, the cross before me, as the song also says, no turning back, no turning back. It's not easy. There are certainly days when it's more difficult to swim against the tide, but God gives me the strength to endure each day. That's absolutely true. And so let's talk a little bit before we bring on Goat Tree to talk about cryptocurrency. We now have the Southern Baptist Convention leaders, as well as Baptist and Methodist seminaries, starting to team up to oppose the vaccine mandates. They said, we have no choice. We have to oppose it. And they make it very clear. And I've talked in the past how I was absolutely astonished that Al Mohler, who is, I forget what his exact title is, but it's the biggest, Southwest Baptist Theological Seminary. Okay. So it is the biggest Southern Baptist seminary. And he is, was very adamant about cheerleading for the vaccine. He called it a miracle. He called it pure science. He said, we need to thank God for giving this to us. We need to all get it because that's how you love your neighbor, and on and on and on. We heard all that stuff. And he just poo-pooed and dismissed out of hand any concern about any cannibal medicine. And yet now they are coming in finally to oppose this governmental overreach. Now, I have to ask you, and I'm glad that they're going to be with us on the politics of this, but there's something more important here. I have to say that if you're going to fight them with a lawsuit, which now they have put together a lawsuit, they've teamed up to do a lawsuit against us, the Baptist and the Methodist seminaries, if you're going to oppose this on a political basis, on a civil basis, because you must, I have to ask the question, what is more important to you? Is it more important to you to offend our rule of law? Or is it more important to you to offend cannibalism? And let me just say that if you're going to grind up children to make your medicine, the least of your worries, Al Mohler and the rest of you, the least of your worries are Joe Biden. God himself will destroy this country. And he may use something far more evil than even Joe Biden. He may use the Chinese to do it. But God will judge this country for what we are doing to children and to the religious leaders who excuse it for their own personal gain. But then they say, well, I can do nothing other than defend this because now I've got to defend this because now it's a vaccine mandate. And now this treads on my freedom. Oh, you're going to get your freedom treaded on real good and hard when we have such a corrupt Christian leadership in this country to stand behind that. They have the president of both Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary and Texas Baptist College in Fort Worth, Texas. Adam Greenway says, our goal throughout COVID-19 pandemic has been to do everything within our power to keep our students, faculty, and staff as safe as possible. So we think that we can keep them safe if we grind up babies. You know, they're not even concerned about the mark of the beast aspect, are they? I just got to say to you, do you honestly think this is going to be something that is going to be presented to you all at once? Oh, here it is. Oh, and here, sign on this dotted line. Full disclosure, right? You know, I once had a pastor who said, when you look, and it was in the context of some religious leader, this happens all the time. You know, we're all human, and we all make mistakes. And, of course, the people who are elevated into a position, they're the ones who are under attack, and who, when they, because when they fall, it is a reproach to the body of Christ and to the Christian religion. But he said, you know, when you see somebody like this go down, he said, understand, it's not something that just happened all at once. When we fall as individuals, it is a gradual process, isn't it? And the way that Ernest Hemingway said in one of his novels, when this very wealthy guy went bankrupt, some guy said to him, yeah, that much money, how in the world did you go bankrupt? And he said, well, gradually, then suddenly. That's the way it is with moral bankruptcy as well. Whether you're talking about a nation or whether you're talking about an individual or you're talking about somebody who's a religious leader, it happens, or talking about yourself as well. It happens with a gradual drift. It happens that we gradually get numbed to what is going on around us. We no longer care that we're using babies, for example, in this particular example. We no longer care that we're using babies to grind them up for a medicine. It's a slow drift. And in a very, you know, it's a marketing, it's a psychological thing. Look at the way that they sell you vegetables with a green giant. Do you go buy those vegetables because the green giant is on the can? No, you buy those vegetables because you've heard the jingle. They have presented it to you over and over and over and over again. And that's the way the mark of the beast is being marketed to you right now. Over and over and over again. You're getting numb to it. You're getting accustomed to it. You're dismissing it. Wow, this can't be it right now. No, no, no. It's gradual conditioning. It's getting you acclimated to this by repetition. I've seen some of these pastors pushing back. This is not the mark of the beast. Oh, we've had people saying that, you know, the Social Security number was the mark of the beast and this and that. Well, quite frankly, they were preparation. And we got numb to those. And we said, yeah, that wasn't it. I guess I really don't have to really worry about this. I'm sure it's going to be very, very obvious when this really happens. No, it isn't. How does this begin? Well, it begins by doing things like ignoring religious exemptions, right? And this is what they're now looking at. They understand from a legal standpoint, from a civil standpoint, they understand the gradual encroachment of this. And so they understand that if they're going to remove the religious exemptions for vaccines, that the number one priority of the Democrats when they came in was the LGBT agenda. That was House Bill number one. For Nancy Pelosi, the Equity Act. With that, they will remove religious freedom. With that, that is the law that they will use, just like these people who went into the baker and said, I demand that you make me a custom cake that is against your Christian religion. Just like if they went into a Jewish deli and said, I want you to make me a Nazi cake or whatever. They knew what they were doing, and they were punishing him, and the persecution was on their side. But they want to make this part of the law, even though they have lost in the courts. And so they understand that once you say, well, we don't care about religious exemptions anymore, this is going to be a foundation for all kinds of persecution. It'll come from the LGBT. It'll come from others. But it'll first be from the LGBT. So they'll stand against that. But they won't stand to protect innocent life. They won't stand against the next step of the mark of the beast. And this is so close to what I understand it to be. That I don't know that it's a preparation anymore. I think these people have been anesthetized. They become numb to this by excusing it for so long they can't tell the real thing when it happens. Still, I respect the decisions of those who, for medical reasons or for conscientious objections, have declined to be vaccinated, said Adam Greenway, the president of these two seminaries, these two Southern Baptist seminaries. He says a government-mandated vaccination program of private businesses and institutions is deeply troubling. And it is. He's absolutely right about that. And I'll support them in their lawsuit. I agree. They should be doing something about it. I'm just disappointed because they've missed the bigger issue. The bigger issue is that liberty is not something that is given to us by the courts. Liberty is a blessing from God. The people who founded this country knew that. We have forgotten that, even in our Southern Baptist seminaries. We encourage vaccination, but we impose mandated vaccination. So they still encourage you to get the cannibal medicine, but we just don't want the government orders to tell us what to do. These people have rebelled against God. They are not upholding the Constitution. They have rebelled against God. The Constitution is under God. If you have rebelled against His fundamental moral laws, don't talk to me about the lesser laws that respect our God-given rights, because God gave them and God will take them away. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, and joining us now is GoatTree. GoatTree's got a lot of experience in cybersecurity. We're not using his regular name here, but he contacted me and said that he wanted to talk about cryptocurrency, and I'm always up for talking about cryptocurrency. I think it's very important right now. All of the financial system, payment system, is in a big state of flux, and so we need to understand the different aspects of this. There's much about crypto that I don't understand, so if he wants to talk about it, I'm going to just give him the floor. So thanks for joining us, GoatTree, and what did you want to tell the people about crypto?
It's always a pleasure to join you when you're on fire like this, David. You're in rare form today.
I guess, you know,
I do want to get to cryptocurrency, but you hit up on some things that you and I have both been working on for years, and I had an epiphany about it last night. And I want to revisit Dark Winter.
Oh, yeah.
Let's put Dark Winter into context.
And let me interject something here. Now, you want to talk about Dark Winter. It was GoatTree who told me, what was it, a couple of years before any of this stuff happened. You said, hey, I'm seeing a lot of chatter in these, in the cybersecurity crowd or whatever. I'm seeing a lot of chatter because you do a lot of work for alphabet agencies and things like that, consulting. And so I'm seeing a lot of chatter about Dark Winter 2. And that's really getting me concerned. And so you tipped me off to this. I talked to people. I mentioned it pass it along. I said, you know, I'm hearing that there's a lot of talk about dark winter. And if you know what the first dark winter was about, that should get you very scared in case, because they've been training on this for 20 years. So it was a couple of years before this all happened. You pointed that out to me. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you first broadcast it like on the first day of 2017, 2018.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
And, you know, dark winter was part of Agenda 2021. Guess what? It's now 2021, mm-hmm. and the winter equinox is less than 40 days away.
Yeah.
And I have been given a lot of thought to this, and I cryptocurrency is going to factor in important. But I just felt the need to revisit this first. Because it's a warning. I don't know why it came to me this way, but let's just stop for a moment and take like 5 minutes to review where we are and where it's going with this dark winter scenario. Yesterday, we had the government shut down another pipeline that was carrying 500,000 barrels of oil between Canada and Michigan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At the start of winter.
And he's begging, you know, the Saudis to unleash some war. But one of his first acts was to shut down a pipeline, and he keeps shutting down pipelines. And like you point out, just before winter. Go ahead.
Right. We're being told that oil is going to be between $4 and $6 a gallon by January. And, you know, that alone, if you think about it, there's going to be a lot of people that may not have the ability to pay their heating. And be at risk of freezing to death if dark winter is, winter is as bad as last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on top of that, we've got 10,000. We've got tens of thousands of doctors and nurses and medical technicians that are being fired right now in the middle of this pandemic for not having a vax.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, these two things, is that unbelievable? It makes no sense.
Oh, yeah. It was all about protecting the hospitals. We had to flatten the curve because we didn't want to overwhelm the hospitals. And now they're having to shut down entire divisions, which they never did during the pandemic, shut down entire departments because they don't have enough staff.
And look at many. I don't know if it's tens or hundreds of thousands of workers that are being laid off and losing their income and losing their ability to pay these soon to be astronomically inflated fuel prices, housing and food prices.
Yes.
And then we've got this manufactured supply chain crisis inflating food and everything else, and not to mention the shortages.
That's right.
You know, there is no way, simply no way, this situation cannot be pre-planned.
That's right.
I'm sitting here looking at this, and it just seems like come January, you know, they've announced January the 4th, some big vaccine day. Let's just look at after January the 4th, which is right in the middle of the winter of 2021. What's going to happen when people run out of the ability to keep warm in general? As winter progresses, I mean, they can't afford the fuel prices.
Yeah,
the government's going to go and open heating facilities, you know, elementary schools, schools in general, places where people can go get warmed up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first thing they're going to ask is, well, are you vaxxed?
Yeah, that's right.
No, but I'm cold.
Yeah.
Well, we can't let you in if you're not vaxxed. Would you like to get vaxxed now?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay. What if you run?
And you know, you've got places already in Germany where they're saying, well, we're not going to let you in the supermarkets because you're not vaxxed. We have situations where the hospitals are denying health care or we've got several hospitals that will not do an organ transplant. They'll let somebody die if both the donor and the person getting the organ are not vaccinated. So I can clearly understand that they would not let people get into a warm space, even if they are homeless, if they're not vaccinated.
Well, the same with the food pantries or the mm-hmm. food distribution, you know.
That's right.
They've got years of food stored where there should be no reason in the world for people to go hungry in this country.
That's right.
And yet, when you go for that aid, they're going to be turning you away if you're not vaxxed. But would you like to be vaxxed?
Yeah, that's right.
If you get vaxxed, you can have your food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you run out of ability to get gasoline, they'll be offering credits and vouchers and all sorts of things so you can go fill up your tank. And when you go to their offices, they're going to ask, are you vaxxed? Or they may turn you out if you're not vaxxed.
That's right. Absolutely.
So, you know, you were talking about this stand your ground, this cannibal medical stuff, these unforced vaccines. I think the test is going to be upon us sooner than people think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree.
And, I mean, I hope I'm wrong about this. When you're being forced to make choice between getting warm or going hungry or transportation in exchange for that vax, I mean, we've got a feral government if it comes to that.
That's right. Yeah, throughout all of this, you know, Biden is now saying, well, yeah, hey, it's not a vaccine mandate. They're strongly saying it's not a vaccine mandate, and say because we're giving you an alternative. We're giving you the alternative that you can be masked and tested, and you can pay for your test. Those are the alternative, right? Or you can just not have a job. So we're giving you a choice there. But we've seen this noose gradually tightening around our necks, haven't we? First, it was like, hey, look, we got this big, wonderful thing out here, and it's going to save you, and it's 100% effective and 100% safe. And then they start saying, well, when people aren't taking them up on it, we'll put you in a lottery to win $1 million. How about that? Or we'll give you this free donut, or we'll do this and that. And then the next stage is it gradually becomes less of a reward and more of a stick, less of a carrot, more of a stick. And what they're doing is they're gradually tightening this noose to the extent that where this is going to head, if we don't stop all of this, we're going to head to the standpoint where they're, and we're already seeing this in other countries, we're seeing it in Australia, we're seeing it in Austria, where they're saying we're going to purge the unvaccinated out of the, not just out of work, not just out of retail spaces, but we're going to purge you out of society, and they're creating these prison camps in Australia, bragging about it on the media. They're going to basically put us in internment camps like they did the Japanese at the beginning of World War II if we don't stop that. That is where this is headed next if we don't stop this gradual noose tightening around us.
Well, you were talking about Andrew Jackson. I kind of equate it closer to the Indian reservation.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Oh, the Indian reservations are very much like Agenda 21 or the UN 2030 agenda. Very, very much like it. They concentrate them in an area. They take their kids away. They purge their culture. They shut down all economic activity and the ability to travel. And so it is very much like the Indian reservations. And people ought to think about that. That predates any of these concentration camps that were done by the Nazis. That was the Indian reservation thing. That was us. And that predates all that.
Well, and Andrew Jackson, of course, said, no, you can't do that to the Cherokee. And he said, watch me. Who's going to stop me?
That's right.
Is that what Biden's doing right now?
Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. Yep, I agree.
Well, you know, I just wanted to hit upon that because people, I think the alarm clock's going off. We've got officially 4, maybe 5 weeks before the winter equinox. And we're going to have dark winter, and it's going to flow right along with Agenda 2021.
Yep. Yep.
And I have made my mind up that there is a way to fight this. Now we can start talking about cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency is our one out here. And I'm afraid we don't have a lot of time to do it. But, you know, I was around on the first digital turning, which was the PCs. And everybody says, oh, man, I wish I was able to buy Apple when it was in its embryonic stage. I wish I was able to buy Microsoft when it was in its embryonic stage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we had the Internet. So everybody's like, I wish I was able to buy Google in its embryonic stage. And
or Amazon.
And
yeah.
We had or Amazon, mm-hmm. exactly, mm-hmm. or Facebook or Twitter. And we're at the fourth turning right now. The third turning was all this data gathering, you know, the Big Brother building all this observation.
And you're talking about different phases of this technocracy that we're talking about when we say we're at the fourth turning of this, right? A fourth generation of evolution of the technocracy.
Yes.
Yes.
And right now, everybody's all rushing to cryptocurrency, but it's still in its embryonic stage, and it will be for another 15 to 20 years. Basically, you haven't seen anything compared to what's to come. I mean, if you were in on the PC revolution, you know, the desktops, you could have never imagined in 20 years you could do the same thing with a smartphone.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's a lot of room and a lot of growth in this cryptocurrency. And 2 weeks ago, the United States government gave its blessing for this to continue. They did that when they allowed three major crypto funds to be listed on the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. One reason I hadn't talked about it is I did not want to start putting out a bunch of false hope because the government could shut this down very easily.
That's right. But we saw that happen in China. We saw the guy who had the biggest mining operation anywhere, and they said, well, we're just going to outlaw it now, and that includes the mining. And so, you know, there's no way that a miner is going to hide that from the government because of the massive power. I mean, it's like, here I am. I'm right over here. There's no question where the big mining operations are. So they just shut it down. He said, you know, they just turned the tap off in just one day. And so, you know, they can use a rubber hose method to shut anything down.
Yeah, and it was also announced that same week, all the crypto markets right now have a market cap of $3 trillion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's not, that's gotten too large for the government to shut down now.
Hmm.
And, you know, last night when we were talking, I said, look at these transactions. If you can, put them up. You have got just four transactions off of a system that monitors crypto exchange, the blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
You've got four transactions that equal over $2 billion. That's just four transactions of a day. You've got so much money moving about in cryptocurrency. There's no way they could shut it down now.
Let me interject here for a second, and what these are screenshots that you sent us before the interview. This is a Twitter account called Whale Alert with an underscore between the two words. And what they do is they look at these big transactions and that type of thing, because that is visible. You know, a lot of people think that talk a little bit about that visibility and how people can see that, because, you know, they can go back and they can trace transactions through this blockchain. And I think that's one of the things that clearly they're moving into. They're not about to shut this thing down like China did, where they go in and just with a rubber hose, you know, beat anybody who's mining. We're just going to smash up your machines and take them away. What they're going to do is American style. They're going to come in and use the IRS against people. And so that's what I think a lot of this, you know, we've had this in the new infrastructure bill and saying, well, you got to know who your customers are. How do you know who your customers are and report this to? You don't know who the customers are. You can see these blockchain transactions out there, but you don't know who that belongs to report it to anybody. So they're trying to impose this kind of know your customer rule that's been in the banking system. They're trying to force that into the crypto world. And it's one of the reasons why I think they played ball with these crypto exchanges to let them list themselves on the stock market exchanges. But he's also, you know, putting out there 80,000 new IRS agents. And to give people an idea of how that big that is, I talked about the fact that there's only 1,800 OSHA inspectors, but he's going to add 80,000 new IRS agents more than 160 times, and that's in addition to what he's already got out there. So I think they're going to be coming after people to try to spot that. So talk a little bit about this whale alert thing and how they can see and what can be seen and what can't be seen by these officials and what can't be seen by the people who are now supposed to report some of this stuff to the IRS. I mean, it's really a catch-22 situation.
Not really. What this whale alert does is they simply set their parameters. Anything over $5 million, they're watching a blockchain, and they'll list it. And you have it. I mean, it's very active. The few screenshots I sent were just some big ones that to prove that there's a lot of money flowing across the blockchain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there's still been 5, 10, 50, 100 billion dollar transactions going on. It's hard to keep up with them all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this, well, it is. But here's the thing, and here's the Achilles heel with the IRS. It doesn't say where these originate from, and these do not say it originated from the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's real simple. Find a foreign brokerage. It's just a keystroke to use a foreign brokerage just as much as it is American. Or Australian, use American. You're out of reach of the government.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot source what country these are coming out of.
They can see the transactions, but they can't see anything in terms of country of origin. They don't know anything about who this belongs to. We can just see those transactions out there. That's why I was saying it's kind of a catch-22 for the for them trying to say, well, you know, we're going to regulate this type of things. Like they don't have this information really to give to the IRS, so that's going to kind of push them to try to get their nose a little bit further into the tent with this. But as you're pointing out, just like you have a VPN where they don't know your country of origin or where you are, they don't know where your ISP is, that you can do that type of thing with a foreign brokerage account as well, right?
Right, and they don't know if they're dealing with a foreign national who is immune to IRS laws or a United States citizen as a foreign account.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of protection in that. So I don't know. I'm not going to give the IRS any suggestions on what to do with it. You know, good luck.
Well, yeah, and it's not so much the IRS as it's kind of the people in the middle that they're going to lean on them to say, well, you better figure out some way to pierce this anonymity here and get that information to us. That's what I think they're doing. They kind of deputize. We've seen this over and over again. The deputization of corporations for government's purposes. And so I think that's a big part of what is happening now. I think, you know, these new laws, these new regulations are trying to deputize these exchange places to grab the information for them because they can't do it themselves.
Well, you forget I'm a hacker. I can just steal someone's identity and open up an account.
That's right. That's right. So,
you know, I wouldn't do that, but I'm just saying that, theoretically, you know, there are a thousand ways to counteract anything that the IRS would be trying to do. They might as well just sit down and shut up, you know. But, this is why it comes back to the end of this dark winter. I want to start teaching your people, your listeners, how to trade this so that they are getting their funds together where they're not going to get caught in this dark winter crush.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to take anything. I'm going to teach them how to trade these cryptocurrencies professionally. And the only thing I want in return is every time they cash out, they take some of their profits and donate to you. Because we got to keep you going.
Oh, that'd be great.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I worked with you long enough. I don't know how you keep things going. You don't ask anything from anyone. And you don't have any sponsors. And yet, here you are doing what you do. And you're committed to it. And it only seems right. That if I can let these people double, triple, or quadruple their money, they throw you $100 into the cryptocurrency to help keep you going.
Well, I appreciate that.
That way we're helping each other.
I appreciate that, and it is on a donor basis. I mean, we're trying to look at some ways that we can, get some revenue that is selling merchandise and some other things. We had a lot of suggestions about that. Primarily, I've just been trying to focus on getting this thing organized and letting people know through the gas gauge, and I haven't caught that up over the weekend for where we need to be. So that's not current. But it's pretty close to current. But, you know, we just give people the general idea. If I get too focused on money, then I can't do the job, and that's the key thing. That's the thing that kind of takes people away from it. So I do appreciate that. But I want people to be able to, as you point out, I think there is a possibility that, this at least, don't put all of your eggs in any one basket. But I think, when we look at ways that people need to prepare, I think that understanding a little bit of the ins and outs as a hedge, not just even against this deliberate sabotage, Gotree, that we're talking about, but also in terms of hyperinflation, if that kicks in, you need to have something that's going to be there in the same way that you need to be figuring out how you're going to store, how you're going to grow your own food, how you're going to make connections in your local neighborhood. You also need to figure out a little bit of a way about how you're going to protect your wealth and how to hedge against this hyperinflation. And I think that cryptocurrency seems to be what people turn to more than gold. Go ahead.
Yes, or use that wealth to make this happen. I mean, I know you're being so modest about it, but you need the tools to fight this.
Yeah.
You need the tools to break up this censorship. I know how to do it, but it costs. There's nothing I can do about that. You have taken this as far as you can with what you have. You need a studio. You need things to take this to the next level. I have no clue for how you've done it. I know one thing. I know if you hadn't taken the path you had, where you're not being influenced by outside people, I could very easily see you on a MSN channel because you're that good. And, we got to look out for one another.
Well, I appreciate that. That's good. I'm so old. They would have hired me on as a script reader. They're looking for presenters that are younger and better looking than I am. But the key thing is we need to give some people some tools on how to survive, and that is across a wide range of things. How are you going to make sure that you got a car that you can keep running? How are you going to stockpile some parts for that to keep it running? How are you going to maybe, like Eric Peters has talked about, it's a difficult thing to do, but maybe even to the extent that you get a diesel that you can then be able to have a wide variety of fuels, because I think that's going to be a choke point, just like we're seeing the fuel that is going to be running the grid. They're really going to come after a choke point in terms of the fuel that runs your transportation. We're going to have a lot of museum pieces that are going to be sitting on people's lawns because they can't get any fuel. So if you want to be able to move around and have some mobility, some old diesel that you can, put together some kind of fuel or something. So there's a lot of different ways that we can crack this, but your expertise is in computers and internet and cybersecurity and in crypto. So what would you suggest where people should start in this?
Well, like I said, this is the fourth turning. And all of crypto is in the embryonic stages. So I've been looking hard at these small startups. One of them, believe it or not, you can buy 100 of them for a penny. And the way to do that, I'll go ahead and say it, I taught Incatel how to do this, is we pick 10 cryptocurrencies that are dollar or less, the ones that show the ability to grow. We'll expect six of them to die. They will just absolutely go kaput for whatever reason. Some may even be a scam, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have one or two that'll double. You'll have one that'll have a 300% or maybe even 500% increase. And then you're going to have one that gets up and gives you a 1,000% return. That's just the odds of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if all 10 of them would give you a 1,000% return. But that would put you at roughly, if you put $1,000 into it, whatever y'all can afford, I'm going to say $1,000 just simply because it's easy to do the calculations. That would give you a $2,500 return, maybe more. Well, you pull your $1,000 you put in out, put it back in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Use that other $1,500, 100 of it's going to go as a donation to David, put the other $1,400 back in and repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the key is looking and finding the small ones that are on the cutting edge that have a good chance. We're not going to fall in love with them. I mean, these things are totally expendable. They're there to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another back end to it. There's going to be another Bitcoin out there. There's going to be another Ethereum. There's going to be, you know, one of them's going to turn out to really be a moonshot. I don't know which one. So we always keep tokens back. They're always in inventory. So if one does get up and go like Bitcoin did 10 years from now, you've got your little stash of them. It pays you again.
Yeah, that's a very smart strategy. And, of course, we've already seen that with Dogecoin, for example. I mean, look at how big that's gotten, and it's still there. It's amazing to me. You know, it's a joke currency. And
there's a coin that will double, triple, or quadruple. Mm-hmm. There's roughly 15,000 coins out there.
Wow.
And one of them every day is doubling or tripling or even more. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of picking the one and being patient and letting it naturally occur. Okay, you got six that are dead. I mean, for whatever reason, they're throwaways. Well, but you still have tripled your money, so there's not really no crying over the ones that didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the world of Gerald Celente. I mean, that guy's so on the mark with trends and stuff. I would like to run this by him and get his input on it before we get this kicked off and let him play devil's advocate, which he's very good at, and try to pick holes in this strategy and,
you know,
see if someone he can benefit from it also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Gerald is not opposed to crypto. You know, he's cautious about it. And, of course, you know, somebody who talks about economics and markets and everything, he's very careful to make it clear that he's not telling anybody to pick anything, you know, not telling people to go get copper or gold or silver or crypto, any particular crypto. But, you know, he understands that there's possibilities for it. And last time I talked to him, he was looking at it saying, yeah, you know, it's we always have to worry about what the governments are going to do. And we always have to worry about these crypto, and it's not crypto. It's the digital cash from the central bankers. We always have to worry about that type of thing. But of course, you know, they're interfering in every kind of market. So, you know, it's just it's just something there that is a hedge against what, you know, if the only place that you're storing your wealth, which is essentially your time, if the only place that you're storing your time is in the U.S. dollar, that's a very dangerous situation. And of course, I've also talked to Tony Arterburn, and he's, you know, he does crypto as well as gold, you know, as gold and silver, Wise Wolf gold. So, you know, he talks about crypto as well. And he also, you know, sells crypto. And all of that is just basically trying to figure out where you can, you know, hedge against inflation and with the dollar tanking. Because, I mean, we look at what has happened over this last year, the trillions of dollars that Trump put in, the trillions of dollars that they're pushing through with the Biden administration. I mean, there's absolutely no way that we're not going to see some of the highest inflation that I think anybody alive has ever seen in their life.
Well, you remember I showed you a broker, gold and silver broker, one of the best in the country. They take crypto.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone wanted to take profits and cash out, well, we can show them where to do that. That's mm-hmm. not a problem.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just, no one's knitted all this together. And it goes back to why I said, let's revisit this dark winter. You know, I get this feeling that they are structuring this for a lot of people to die.
Yes.
Food shortages,
mm-hmm.
fuel shortages, warmth. I mean, come on, we've got a very insidious thing going on with our government. We can counteract And we can't save the world. We can only save ourselves. And, you know, if it helps people get through this dark winter, they lost their jobs, whatever the case may be, I think it's time. I think we're behind the curve on it, but I think it can be done. And once we get through that, hopefully unvaxxed, then we can start looking at our communities and organizing and maybe turn this ship around.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I think there's a lot of signs that they're very concerned about it. I mean, the admissions that Scott Gottlieb made over the weekend saying, you know what, we're pushing so hard on this, this may blow up in our face. We may lose some of the reject. You know, people may start carving back exemptions again, you know, medical and religious exemptions. They may start doing that. We may have people pushing back against these mandates. And he's not implying even in corporations, but also in schools. So they're very concerned that, you know, we may be waking up. And I think that Biden's authoritarian urges are waking people up because he's going so extra fast with this. And because there's now the, you know, there's no longer he's on our team type of understanding for people to give it a pass and say, well, just give him some more time. You know, he's just working this thing out. So I think all of those things are in our favor. But we still have to figure out how we're going to reorganize society, because I think one of the things that's come out of all of this, Goat Tree, as I was saying earlier in the program, a lot of people are starting to realize just how evil the people they were working for are, because they absolutely have no respect for you. I mean, do you really have a career if you're going to work for somebody that has such disregard for your life, for your informed consent, that they would try to force something like this on you or fire you? I mean, you really, it's really, in a sense, it's a blessing to have the veil removed and you see these employers and this government and the pharmaceutical companies for what they are. And we still have to deal with that. And we have to come up with strategies to deal with it. But the key thing is to understand who we're dealing with first.
Well, I understand totally. I mean, I was part of the deep state till they tried to kill me. I mean, they gave me a pretty good clue that my help's not needed anymore.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, I know how they work. I mean, I hate to say it, but I was misled. I thought it was patriotism and, you know, all that neat stuff. But no, it was just they pull people into this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, since 2007, I'm off the reservation. I have no use for these people. They've got some severe paybacks coming if I decide to pull the trigger on it. And, you know, that brings me back to crypto for a moment. You know, John McAfee, when he passed away, he said he had 31 terabytes of information he wanted to let out. And everybody respected McAfee's technology. McAfee was always cutting edge, but he had a failure.
Mm-hmm.
He put his information into these NFT tokens, non-fungible tokens, and he designed it himself, and it's called Sarcophagus. So even someone as brilliant as McAfee overlooked one thing. He made one mistake. So they located all these NFT tokens, and his 31T of information remains locked away because he made a mistake with the hashing. Therefore, you can't open the tokens.
Hmm. So, interesting.
Even the best of the best will make mistakes on this crypto.
Yep.
And we have to assume that risk and move along. We're not going to put all our eggs in one basket where we get blown up because of one stupid trade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've given this a lot of thought, and it's to me, it seems like it's now to the point where if we're going to retain our independence, we have got to have the funds in order to do it. I call them FU funds. I've got plenty of FU funds. You know how they scream Joe Biden?
You got Go Brandon funds, or?
Yeah, okay, we call them that too. I like FU funds better because if I go to the gas station And I don't care if they're charged $20 a gallon. I have enough funds. I can say, F you, give me the gas. You want $10 for a loaf of bread? F you. Here's your funds. Not everybody's in that position. And, you know, I think that's what it's going to take. We can't be ashamed for being successful. We can't feel like we're sinning because we're taking care of ourselves. We can't feel like that we're making profits in order to survive. If that's a sin, sorry, God, we're going to have an interesting judgment day.
Oh, yeah. No, there's nothing at all wrong with money. You know, as long as you don't make that your whole thing and that's not your focus. That's just basically the exchange of our labor, you know, is our money. So there's nothing dishonorable about that. There's nothing dishonorable about making, we're not communists here. And we understand that. And of course, the people who do understand that, you know, it's part of the Christian ethic to understand that there is nothing wrong, that the laborer is worthy of his hire. That's a long established principle in Christianity.
Well, I'm glad you put that out there because a lot of people guilt each other over being successful. Well, God don't want you to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that.
No.
And, you know, if people are interested in doing this, I want to teach them how to do it, and then I want them to teach other people how to do it, like-minded. I don't want a bunch of bandits doing things, but, you know, like-minded people that are looking to survive and not acquiesce to this freeze to death or get the vax, or mm-hmm. starve to death or get the vax. So this is not right.
That's
you know, this is way, shape, or form.
Well, if you look at what is happening, it's not really a reasonable idea to think that this is just incompetence. I mean, these people are malicious. They no longer care about transmission, really. They can even come out and say the vaccine doesn't make any difference in the transmission, but you got to get it anyway. So we know that they've got cards that they're not showing. Many of these cards they've already exposed. We know that they have an obsession to get everybody vaccinated. For that reason alone, we ought to resist it. But we know exactly what they're doing to the rule of law, to individual liberty, their contempt for all of it. And we've known their long-term plan of what they want to have in place by 2030 for a long time, because they've talked about that forever. And everything that they have done is pushing us towards that end goal. So I think you're exactly right. We need to work as, and I think it's a great strategy, you know, find some cheap stocks out there, some penny stocks, essentially, or not penny stocks, but, you know, penny crypto or fraction of a penny, and, you know, distribute it around and see what's going to happen with it. And so, you know, it'll be good. And if you want to come back on and talk, certainly we'll talk anytime about crypto and about cybersecurity, how people can, you know, some of the nuts and bolts about what they need to watch out for in terms of security. I think that's one of the things that's really key that we need to talk about in the future, GoTree, and that is, you know, just the nuts and bolts of it. How do you go about protecting this? Because out of ignorance, a lot of people have been severely ripped off of their wallets and other things like that. Because there's a lot of people who, you know, you're a newbie in this, and you're kind of a babe in the woods, and there's a lot of people out there who are really sharp and know the terrain and know how to take advantage of people.
Well, that's absolutely correct. That's why I didn't want to rush into it today, even though, you know, the equinox is coming.
Yeah,
I wanted to think this out. I wanted to put together a program. I guess it's the same one that I'm going to be using, but and then also get people's security up to where they aren't going to be victimized by criminals or the government.
Well, I agree. Yeah, I think we got a little bit more time. I think what they're running this out pretty quickly. But I think their deadline is and remains 2030, where they want to put this together. You know, the UN Agenda 21 that was like sometime in the 21st century we're going to do this. And then they got very specific, both the UN and Davos, about 2015, they started saying, well, we're going to make it 2030. And I take that very seriously. That also coincides with the fourth turning. I think they understand the cycles, the natural cycles in society, and all these things are aligning, if you will. At the same time, they're taking advantage of those natural rhythms that are built into society. So we want to get you back on. We'll talk a little bit more next time about some of the nuts and bolts and what people have to do to protect themselves against fraud and against theft if they start to get in this as a hedge. It's great talking to you, GoTree. Thanks, and we'll do this again soon.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, David. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, we're going to take a quick break, folks, and we'll be right back. I want to finish up a little bit with some headline news and some breaking issues with the New World Orders, as a matter of fact. We'll be right back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
All right, and just to follow up here in the headline news, one of the things that I mentioned briefly, talking to GoatTree, was buried into this $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill is not just the massive army of IRS agents, but a new IRS reporting requirement. Why crypto and NFT fans are worried about this infrastructure bill. This is from Fast Company, and they point out critics worry that the new provision could force participants in crypto transactions and NFT trades, which are often anonymous, to have to disclose information about the people that they're doing business with, which they might simply not have. That's what I was saying, a catch-22. These people may not know who they're dealing with. And so this is really a way for the government to incentivize them coming up with new techniques to surveil people and to report on people. As I say, miners, stakers, lenders, decentralized application and marketplace users, traders, businesses, individuals are all at risk of being subject to this reporting requirement, even though in most situations, the person or the entity in receipt is not in the position to report the required information, warned an attorney, Abraham Sutherland, an adjunct professor at the University of Virginia School of Law, an advisor to the Proof of Stake Alliance, an industry group, in a September report. But nevertheless, the Biden administration is going ahead with that. They don't really care. You figure out a way to do it, or we'll hold you responsible. This is typical of what you see from the government. And at the same time, as they spend more money, go further into debt and raise taxes. And this is not simply going to, they never raise taxes on corporations or the rich people. They don't pay taxes. I mean, the rich people don't even pretend to pay taxes. The corporations, they will, in many cases, will write a tax check, but then they will pass that along to the customer in the price of the goods or services, the same as they do with minimum wage increases. If the Democrats' tax and spend reconciliation bill is enacted, the average top tax rate on personal income would rise up to 57.4%, according to the Tax Foundation. Now, here's the top four in terms of the highest percentages. New York at 66.2%, California at 64.7%, New Jersey 63.2%, Hawaii at 62.4%. The lowest eight are all tied at 51.4%. It's a big difference there. I mean, that's a, you know, New York at 66% versus these other states at 51%. I mean, you're talking about 15% difference in taxes that on your income. That is a big difference. And, of course, this is a top tax rate. The eight that are tied at the 54.4%, 51.4%. And again, that is astonishingly high, in my opinion, to think that more than half of your income is going to be at the top marginal rate, is going to go to the government. But those lowest ones at 51.4%, Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington State, and Wyoming. So those are the lowest of the tax regions. Goldman Sachs is predicting that inflation will get much worse before it gets better. Well, there you go. I mean, that's a pretty safe prediction, don't you think? I don't think that's going to be difficult to understand. Al Gore is back, and Andrea Mitchell had him on. That's Alan Greenspan's wife. And so, you know, establishing old friends, had him on to a talk. And, of course, his solution to climate change is to watch everything with mass surveillance. And that's really what I had a report that was going to talk about what was happening with Google at Sidewalk Labs up in Toronto. It got canceled by the COVID stuff. So never happened. But I know exactly what they were up to. They sold it on the basis of environmentalism to the people in Toronto. And then some of the people who were true believers in that started to realize, wait a minute, this is nothing other than a total surveillance of every aspect of our life. And they got out of it. And eventually, they shut down that particular one. But Google has a lot of these things running. And this is really what is essentially behind all of this. Again, the 9/11, dark winter, and the environmental process, they're all tied together. And you can see sometimes, as I pointed out, you know, 9/11 and Homeland Security and all that stuff, they started going towards the surveillance police state, watching everything that everybody did. Whereas with dark winter and the environmental agenda, they wanted to start shutting down and taking over different aspects of our life. But occasionally you'll see that they switch over to these other agendas as well, as they come out and say things like this from Al Gore. We get data consistently from 300 existing satellites, more than 11,000 ground-based, air-based, sea-based sensors, multiple internet data streams using artificial intelligence, said Al Gore. And it is called the Trace Coalition to monitor everything that you're going to do. He said, all that information is combined with visible light, infrared, all the other information that's brought in, and we can now accurately determine where the greenhouse gas emissions are coming from. That's the way they sell this. Back in 2008, he said, when he was saying that all the polar ice caps were going to be gone by now, you know, within 5 years, so that's back in 2013. He said, next year we'll have it down to the level of every single power plant, refinery, every large ship, every plane, every waste dump, and we'll have the identities of the people who are responsible for each of those greenhouse gas emissions. That's why when I say, when we talk about the central bank digital cash system, if we stay in this system that's being designed by the central bankers, by the International Monetary Fund, by the Bank of International Settlement, if we stay in that system, they will use this environmental alarmism to essentially control everything about our lifestyle. They've already talked about the fact, and you've already got MasterCard working with the United Nations to say, we are going to assign a carbon impact number, a factor, to everything that you buy. So if you go in and you buy some meat, oh, well, that's going to have a certain carbon value to it. All right, I don't want to get two of these. I'm sorry, you've exceeded your limit and you cannot pay for this now. They'll stop you from buying it. They'll shut off the United Nations working with MasterCard to come up with a way that they can essentially turn off your purchasing power. Even if you got the money, you're not going to be allowed to buy it if you get over a certain carbon amount. This is how they will control you. Through the banking system. That's why it is important to listen to what Goatree is saying and to think about this. How can you hedge your bets against this very evil system that is designed to track and to control everything that you do? Should Texas go alone? Go it alone. Ted Cruz thinks secession cannot be written off. Well, it should never be written off. Quite frankly, that's what the entire United States was built upon, the idea of secession. that the purpose of government is to defend our God-given rights, and when it becomes destructive of that, it is our right and our duty to alter or to abolish that form of government and to create new ones. That's what secession is about. It's not about states' rights. It's about creating states that support your God-given rights. And that when those states do not support you, states have powers. They don't have rights. We have rights, and the power of the state is rightfully used to protect those rights. That's the basic operating theory and principle of America that works and meshes perfectly well with a Christian understanding of not only politics, but also of the fallen nature of man. And that's what we need to keep focused on. Secession can be one way, but I've talked to the people, and I need to get them back on again, from the 10th Amendment Center. They said, look, you know, they've been going around helping state legislators to push back against unlawful, unconstitutional things that are being done by the federal government, and to do it instead of just passively sitting back and filing a lawsuit and waiting to see what happens out of the box of chocolates in the Supreme Court, to actually take proactive, to actually use the power that they have to defend our rights and liberties. And there's two basic ways to do that without having secession, without having a war, because you know that the federal government is going to use force on anybody that secedes. So the intermediate stage of that, the peaceful stage, is to do nullification. And of course, you can have a state government nullify the federal. You can have a local nullify the state and the federal. There's a lot of different levels at which the lesser magistrates can nullify unlawful orders and laws that are being done by others, violating the Constitution that they sworn to uphold. The other part of it is the anti-commandeering statute. They cannot force you. They have no authority to force you to enforce their laws at the local level. And so those two things combined, along with, of course, they've completely stopped all jury trials now because of the pandemic. It's funny how the pandemic affects liberty and the rule of law more than it does humans and their bodies, but it really has. So you can, if you have jury nullification, if you have nullification by the lesser magistrate, if you have the anti-commandeering aspects, those are the things that we need to start revitalizing and understanding their full impact, not just focusing strictly on lawsuits. Absolutely do all of it, but do not limit it to just one thing. Real quickly, before we run out of time, I want to leave you with a picture of why we fight this and why we do not want to live in the way that people are living in China under the Chinese communists, who are basically fascist as well, economically. Look at this picture of children in China lined up. They've got, you know, 6 feet between them or whatever, and they have their masks on, and each one of them has a board or a cardboard board with writing on it that shows a QR code and other things about these kids here are nothing other than inventory. Well, that's a cute kid. He's they stop because most of them are just looking at the person who's walking by with us. Isn't that a shame? I mean, you talk about dehumanizing people at a very early age. That one little kid, he's got a yellow cap on, and the person who's just going along, he looks at him, hey, he's waving. And so they reacted like a human being would, and they kind of paused on him for a little while. Can't see him smiling, but you can see his eyes, and you can see him waving his hand. And that's what they want to do. They want to remove every aspect of our humanity from each other so that we can't read the emotions, so that we can't connect to each other. One of the best examples of that, locking guests inside Disneyland. China's extreme COVID tactics. Remember, this is made in China. And I'm not talking about whether this was a Fauci gain-of-function thing made in the Wuhan lab. No, I'm talking about the lockdown measures, all of this stuff, that stuff. No doubt about it. It was made in China. No doubt about the fact that they used over 100,000 bots to pressure the Italian government into doing a lockdown and then leveraged that to tell everybody else that they needed to do a lockdown as well. And so what are they doing in Shanghai Disneyland? This was about a week and a half ago. Nearly 34,000 people at Disneyland were locked into the facility, had to undergo testing, which ended about midnight, long after the park had closed. They were ferried home on 220 special buses, and all were found to be negative. But they were still required to isolate at home for 2 days and to be retested for the coronavirus in 2 weeks. Why would they do that to everybody? 34,000 people in Disneyland. They keep them all night and testing them. And then even though nobody is positive, they still make them quarantine. They said this all happened after a single positive case of a woman who traveled to Shanghai from nearby Hangzhou over the weekend. While officials are yet to confirm whether she visited Disneyland, they don't even know that she went there. They don't care. This is why we have to oppose this. This is what is coming out of China. This is what matters more. Yeah, we should fire Fauci. He should be in jail. But you better pay attention to the tactics that they've used. The common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.